final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch a cat fish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land.
run a trot line, and a country boy can survive.
Country folks can survive. Country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Agency is doing. We all know about the August spill that leaked 3 million gallons of highly toxic mine waste water into the Animas River in Colorado. I covered that story in multiple videos, even how it was predicted in a letter that the EPA was going to create this disaster in order to gain superfunding blitzkrieg status. But little does the public know, the EPA caused a serious spill in Georgia only months before contaminating the Animas River in Colorado. In Greensboro, the EPA funded contractors grading a toxic 19th century cotton mill site where they struck a water main, sending deadly sediment into a nearby creek. Now, even though this accident took place 5 months ago, the hazard still poses a very serious threat. Now, this sediment flows carry dangerous mercury, lead, arsenic, and chromium. Now, according to microbiologist Dave Lewis, the lead contamination in the soil where the Georgia spill took place is 20,000 times higher than the federal levels established for the drinking water, what they claim to be safe. 20,000 times of lead. Now, this cotton mill site contained 34 hazardous chemicals, 30 of which are on the EPA's list of priority pollutants because of their high toxicity, their persistence, the lack of degradability, and harmful effects on living organisms. Now, when you go to the EPA's official website, they provide a mission statement which reads, "Our mission is to protect human health and the environment." Oh. Well, lately, the agency has been doing exactly the opposite. Now, the spill caused by the EPA in Colorado is expected to cost the taxpayers up to $28 billion to clean up. The EPA caused the spill. The people pick up the tab. Not to mention the damaging effects it's going to have on the environment for who knows how long. I don't think it'll ever be the same, obviously. People's drinking water is being affected, the nature, I mean, it's out of control. I'm going to keep an eye on these guys.
It's been 12 days since an accident at a defunct Colorado gold mine fouled rivers in three states. Special correspondent Kathleen McCleary has an update on the impact the spill has had on Native Americans and others in northwest New Mexico.
The sunflowers in upper Fruitland, New Mexico are drooping.
When you look at them now, they're all hanging over because they need water.
On Lorenzo Bates' farm, it's not just sunflowers in trouble. The alfalfa, key for feeding his animals, is stunted.
So this is right now 12 days behind. This hay has to get me through the winter season.
Bates, the speaker of the Navajo Nation, tallied his losses so far at $1,000 in just 1 week. No small amount in this poor region. It's all because Bates and thousands of others here couldn't pull water from the San Juan River, which abuts his land. Irrigation ditches were shut down after the mine accident earlier this month, 100 miles north in Silverton, Colorado. Efforts by the Environmental Protection Agency to clean up one mine resulted in a breach at another, the Gold King Mine, which has been inactive since 1923. A 3-million-gallon toxic stew of heavy metals poured downstream, turning the Animas River a shocking yellow. The Animas flows south and meets the San Juan in Farmington, New Mexico. Then it snakes north into Utah, where it skirts the upper edge of the Navajo Reservation. Eventually, it turns south into Arizona and ends up in a branch of Lake Powell, a journey of nearly 500 miles. Among those hardest hit are the Navajos, the nation's largest Native American tribe. 300,000 of them are spread out on a reservation larger than 10 states. The chapter in Shiprock, named for its enormous rock outcropping, has issued warnings to its members.
Stay away from the river. Do not use the river water for anything.
And that big tank.
Chili Yazzie is the chapter president. He's coordinating water deliveries to tribe members.
There are many livestock owners that rely on the river for water for their livestock. As the local government, we began delivering water to at least those livestock animals.
How are we going to coordinate to...
An alphabet soup of state, federal, and local agencies are working with Navajos and other farmers and ranchers to evaluate the problem and fix it.
Hey, we're starting to see some very positive things come forward.
Public meetings happen nearly every day, where ordinary citizens can take concerns directly to officials.
I have to say I want to believe you, but I'm not comfortable with the idea of cleaning a ditch after the season.
This was not something that was intentionally done or anything like that. So.
Mark Hayes is the on-site coordinator for the EPA.
This has deeply and greatly impacted a lot of people and put a lot of people at an inconvenience. So you can imagine that the frustration that comes out from that. So we still have some concerns out there, and we're not, you know, we're not trying to downplay it or anything like that, but it's definitely a concern, and it's definitely a sense of urgency that we're trying to get this handled.
The agency, which ordinarily investigates environmental disasters, has taken responsibility for this one. Administrator Gina McCarthy.
This is a tragic incident. I am absolutely deeply sorry that this ever happened, but I want to make sure that we react positively and in a way that's credible, and we move this forward.
Thank you.
But that's not enough for New Mexico Governor Susana Martinez, who surveyed the scene last week.
Well, we certainly expect the EPA to pay for every bit of the costs for this catastrophe. They caused it, they pay for it.
The governor has threatened legal action against the EPA, as have Navajo leaders.
It's a given that folks are going to sue the U.S. EPA. So President Obama is going to be the one that's going to end up at some point in time possibly signing a check. The question is, how big is that check going to be?
Settling ponds are reducing the contamination for now. The Gold King mine isn't unique. There are 500,000 abandoned mines across the country, more than 20,000 here in Colorado alone, and some are leaking dangerous chemicals. According to the EPA, a nationwide cleanup could cost as much as $50 billion. Back on the San Juan River, the golden hue has dissipated.
What we're doing now is measuring the electrical conductivity, the mineral content of the river water.
State scientist Dennis McQuillan has run tests comparing river water with water from nearby wells.
So remember, it's 474 in the river, so it's going to be stabilizing in just a minute.
Almost 1,800.
And what this tells us is that this well has groundwater, not river water. This well has not been touched by the contamination in the river. And this is a really good thing.
That allowed state officials to give an all clear to resume drinking well water. Saturday night, they began scheduling irrigation and lifted the ban on the recreational use of the river. But they advised residents to wash with soap after contact with the water and warned against eating any of the fish. But the Navajos, a sovereign nation, haven't lifted their restrictions. And many are worried about the long-term environmental impact of the spill.
Sometimes when you look at the river, it seems like normal. But what has settled, what solids have settled to the bottom of the river?
Those solids could be roiled up in a heavy storm. Protecting and preserving the river is especially important for the Navajos, who've lived here for more than 600 years, and for whom the land and water have very special meaning.
The water and the land are very central to our way of life, not only physically but spiritually. We are in a state of mourning.
Okay, friends, here's some information that people seem to have forgotten.
I'm Kathleen McCoy.
I covered this when this event happened, and this is a conversation with the scientist that was involved in this. So let's have a listen to this. It runs about maybe 5-6 minutes, so maybe 7. Let's have a listen.
That's a website.
Yeah, I'm involved in the project. But
you are a scientist, so then, and you know that this is experimental. You've never done it before?
No, it's been done in the 1970s. It's been done recently in the 1990s and 2000s.
Oh, that's not what it said on this article here.
3, 2, 1.
0, +1, 0, +1, 0, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15.
Ah, crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
15 seconds before you.
Hello, everybody. Oh, wow. That was a bummer. I got a dead airspace going on there.
You're going about 30 seconds.
About 30 seconds. All right, everybody, we're live. You're listening to Mad Science. I took a little too long getting back. Might have to run off again and get my doggone coffee mug that I left in the microwave.
I'll get it.
Thanks, Ronnie. Oh, hey, you're listening to Mad Science here on Shazia's Radio. I got Thomas here, I got Steve here, and guess what? Who's sitting inside my studio right now? Raymond. Say hi, Raymond.
Hi, Raymond.
Oh, yeah, okay. That's good for radio. So anyway, you listened to a couple different little pods there that I played up there about the EPA making a huge blooper, and some folks out there in the conspiracy world think it was intentional on the one that was at least done in Georgia so that they could get some funding. And I'm hoping that that's not the case, but who knows. But also, they're, you know, they did one that, I don't know what they dumped in Georgia, but they dumped over there in Colorado River, which is, as you heard from the podcast there, it was it would affect a lot of people. So they're the Environmental Protection Agency. They're there to protect everybody. You know, you can always trust your government. I'll leave it at that. But anyway, one of the deals was talking about there, as a matter of fact, all these links are posted over there at shazizradio.com/superchat.html and over at Awake Radio chat room as well. So if you want to go back and watch the videos and listen to those links, that's where they're located at for the moment. But one of the things was NASA, in a conversation that went on between a lady who called up one of the NASA representatives, talking about how they were dumping lithium in the air to basically test for how weather patterns work. So I don't know a whole lot about lithium, but got my buddy Thomas on here, knows a little bit about lithium, and Steve. So what do you guys think, man? Could you give somebody a rundown on that lithium? Anybody?
Going well, you go first, man. I got my microphone muted. I was giving you a chance.
Oh.
No, you jump in there, Tom. I'll pull you up. Okay, well, number one, it's an alkaline metal. It's not very far on the periodic chart and in property from calcium and sodium and, you know, potassium. We know what those as raw metals do. So the other thing is that, you know, I was mentioning earlier that they, you know, attributed a fountain or a spring that they found down in South America that they believe was actually the real story behind the fiction of the Fountain of Youth, that its properties for, I guess, making life better and maybe potentially extending life a good percentage, you know, enough to really seriously be noticeable to the lithium content that was in the spring. So, and of course, we know that lithium was used for people who were considered crazy at one point, too. In fact, I think they still prescribe some different compounds of lithium, just like they do with fluoride. I mean, they use a delivery system to deliver fluoride into your brain and calcify the pineal gland to calm people down who are irate, schizophrenic, stuff like that.
It's trying to remember used for about 70 years, Tom.
I'm trying to remember the name of it.
Do you think that lithium would help me out? Because I'm kind of crazy.
Thorazine is the one that they're using with the fluoride, and I think it's just the same process. They're combining some sort of hydrocarbon to the fluoride, to the lithium, to deliver it into the system. I'm guessing they're not giving it to them raw, because if you've ever done any looking around on YouTube, you pull some raw, like pure lithium metal out of a lithium battery and leave it laying out too long, and it's going to go bad pretty quick.
Yeah, also, yeah. Don't it have a reaction with water when it hits water, the pure lithium?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Just like all the other alkalines that are near it. So,
well, anyway, I just kind of think that that's really not something that you necessarily want to be dumping in the air. I mean, basically, they said
that...
You
want to calm down the population.
Yeah, you want to calm down the population. Get them all high or something like
well,
that.
In fairness to this, that's what I was saying earlier. Psychiatry has been using lithium for about 70 years, particularly with people with bipolar disorder. And according to one article, it's to do with brain volume deficits. They've been doing imaging studies of people with brain volume deficits, and when they give them lithium, it helps to recover some of the loss. Now, that might be a good thing or a bad thing, but I mean, I've been looking at reports for at least 5 years, possibly up to seven since the financial crisis hit, and because so many people were getting annoyed with the fact that they worked out that Basically, the financial industry has taken us all for a big ride and laughing at us in the process. They were talking about adding it to the water supply to reduce the number of suicides.
Yikes.
Well, that's kind of shutting the stable door after the horses bolted, because if we didn't have the deliberately manufactured financial crisis in the first place, people wouldn't be killing themselves because they can't feed the family.
Well, it's all, man, I tell you what, it drives me insane. You know, you got folks out there that call you a tinfoil hat nutcase wearing conspiracy theorist that says that chemtrails is a conspiracy nutcase kind of deal there, and that they don't do it. However, you got companies out there that advertise geoengineering that say that they can modify your weather, and they got 160-mile range that they could affect, so they could make it rain where it needed to rain and so on and so forth. So there's companies out there apparently still in business being able to do that. Of course, now that's where the aluminum and barium oxides and stuff like that come in. That's what they're supposedly using on that side. Then you got NASA dumping lithium on another side. So, you know, you're a nutcase for saying it, but now you got an actual person from NASA that just basically admitted to over the phone that, yeah, they have sprayed stuff like that in the air. So,
well, it's kind of interesting, Shaziz, that maybe 5 years ago I was asking people what they knew about chemtrailing. And they said, oh, no, 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 it's a conspiracy theory. So I showed them the BBC documentary and the reports they put on the BBC website about the geoengineering where they're seeding the clouds.
Yeah, and they did it back in the Vietnam War. They were putting silver iodide in the clouds to get it to rain so that the enemy couldn't move their trucks and tanks and stuff around because it'd be too doggone muddy, you know. Plus,
and to be perfectly honest, Shaziz, any mad scientist knows that tinfoil doesn't work as a hat. You need decent copper.
Yeah. Yeah. So they also the whole Agent Orange thing that was sprayed down there to cause the foliage to die off so that they couldn't hide in the weeds. So they were trying to make it rain so it'd be muddy. They were trying to kill off the weeds so that they couldn't hide in the weeds. And so that's why you have all the people that came back from the Vietnam War that were suffering from Agent Orange is what they called it. But that was a chemical that they were using to kill off the plants. So like I said, you can always trust your government. I mean, you got the doggone EPA dumping crud in the river, either via by accident in one case or on purpose in another case for whatever reasons under the sun. You know, I'm a firm believer that this planet can clean itself up if left alone long enough. But the problem is the crud is being dumped so fast. Not only are you whacking out the fish and everything that the food chain eats, you know, the little tiny shrimp, and then the fish eat that, and then you eat the fish and so on, the birds eat the fish. And then they wonder why birds are dropping out of the sky with their guts all mushified. You know, and it's you tell somebody that, you're a nut for saying it. But what other purpose other than fireworks, which I don't know if anybody out there believes that it was actually fireworks that caused a bunch of birds to fall out of the sky. But we did a radio show here about a week or so back where we talked about the Corexit and the Fukushima radiation thing going on out there. You know, if it's as bad as what a lot of people are saying about the radiation leaking into the Pacific Ocean, and the Pacific Ocean is dying off, and in the Gulf of Mexico, they threw thousands of gallons. They said they cut it back 75%, which equaled about 70,000 gallons of Corexit a day that they were pumping out there to clean up that oil spill. Supposedly, it's environmentally safe. Well, I'm kind of thinking like this, man. If you're throwing all this crud in from the air, you're throwing it into the water, you're throwing it in onto the land, and you're getting bombed from both directions, man. How much more can go on before people start either going crazy from lithium or getting some sort of bad bronchial disease from whatever else that they're spraying out there? Not to mention, you know, you got pesticides that people use out there. We live in a toxic soup because of the stupidity of all those people out there, man.
People are going to start.
Well, it's this. People knew so well after the 70s that Agent Orange that was sprayed in Vietnam were causing serious cases of cancer. So the Irish, in their wisdom, to combat rhododendron, which is a non-native species and an invasive species that is kind of overgrowing parts of Killarney National Park in County Kerry, in 2003, they thought it would be a good idea to spray Agent Orange on it.
Huh. See?
I mean, you were saying earlier that EPA stands for every polluted aquifer.
Yeah.
Well, it's no wonder fresh, clean water is a very precious resource. Well, the people that are starting to protect us start polluting it.
If right now it costs $1 a bottle to buy water, imagine what it's going to cost when everybody finally realizes what all the crud they've been dumping and down the river. The Navajo Nation over there, they got cattle to feed. They rely on that water, you know. And then the EPA, to make things right, brought in tankers full of water that were tankers that were used to deliver oil. So they used cruddy tanks to bring them in water, and when they seen these cruddy tanks come in there, they said, hold on a second, we're not going to drink that. You know, well, the EPA said, well, we're going to have to leave it up to you to get water then.
But can you see the actual link between politicians constantly banging on about water is a precious resource and they're running out of it? And then another government agency, dumping loads of toxic chemicals into the fresh water supply.
Well, the whole Know Your Place, Shut Your Face campaign is in full effect, because if you say anything against the government, it's, you know, you'll shut your pie hole and just do what I say and not as I do. It's all right for them to do that kind of stuff, but the average Joe, I mean, come on, man. We're trying to make the world a better place. But
well, let's leave the EPA alone, and let's go on to more positive matters, mate.
Yeah, that's it.
There are things we can do about that. Write to your congressman, write to your politician,
yeah,
and ask them why water is a precious resource, when it seems that people who have a piece of paper from some civil servant seem to feel it's perfectly acceptable to pollute it.
So, before we leave off into the next subject, which I got an interesting subject I don't want to talk to, thanks to Raymond bringing me out a pretty neat little deal, is that when you do call your politicians, first off, you need to tell them, know your place and shut your face. You say, listen, buddy, you shut your pie hole and I got something to say, all right? You're just going to have to lay the law down. That's how you got to talk to them politicians. Go in there to their office and slam your fist down on the desk and demand satisfaction. What do you think, man?
I think that's a really good idea. But it needs to be more than one. About 15 or 20 people that represent 2 or 3 million go in there, and all 20 of them slam their fist on the desk at the same time.
Yeah, that's it. I don't advocate violence, but man, they got to quit dumping stuff in the river. Anyway,
I think that would be a very short conversation if you walked into a congressman's office and started banging the table and saying, shut the hell up and listen to me.
Well, maybe, but gotta admit, in theory, it sounds good.
I think asking them questions, I like
John Wayne's attitude.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm pretty sure they thought, in theory, dumping all that lithium in the environment and that Agent Orange was a good idea, too.
Okay, I like John Wayne's idea, and I think that would work better with politicians. The madder you get, he said, talk low, talk slow, and don't say too much. In other words, let them know you're angry.
Yeah, that's a good plan.
The quiet ones that they're concerned about, if you come in shouting, then they just think you're a lunatic.
Well, I'm going to be a lunatic if this stuff keeps up. I mean, come on, man. The EPA will fine you $25,000 to $30,000 for releasing freon in the air. They'll fine you $25,000 to $30,000 for dumping oil down the creek or something like that. They can go dump 3 million gallons of crud in the Colorado River, which is going to go all the way downstream and affect every... You know what they said? They said, oh, it's all right. Just wait for the crud to float by and then turn your water back on. Seriously?
Yes, the reason why they can fine you, but you can't fine them, is because you're not qualified to put toxic chemicals into the water supply, but they are.
Yeah, I didn't have the little badge thing, so I didn't get to dump the crud in the river.
But this is one of the questions that I would be asking my local politicians if my water supply was deliberately polluted by an agency that was there to protect me. What qualifications do they have to pollute my water supply?
Well, if I go outside and I start a tire fire, first the fire truck will show up down here, and then the doggone EPA will go show up down here for all the black crud that I'm kicking up in the air, and I'll get fined. I'll go to jail. But these guys, what they do, they get the bonus check, and then they get to build a new facility to treat water. How's that work, man?
Well, it's problem, reaction, solution, isn't it? They're causing the problem to run out there and say, well, we've got the solution, and it means you pay more taxes.
Well, anyway, it's all ludicrous.
$1 billion, right?
You gotta shut your pie hole and stop breathing out CO2 or pay your taxes and know your place and shut your face. That's their attitude. These guys, do they work for us or we work for them?
Well, this is one of the questions that I ask politicians frequently when I have the displeasure to meet these insane lunatics. I said, do I work for you or do you work for me? Because I'd like a straight answer for once in your career. Because I seem to be confused about that.
Yeah, I understand your confusion. I understand your frustration. So with that said, let's move on to the next subject before we get all riled up and somebody drops the atomic bomb on the Shaziz Mad Science Show.
you need to stop stressing yourself, mate.
Yeah. Anyway, for those of you that might have missed the first portion of this deal, my buddy Raymond came all the way down from Texas to visit with me. And he's already said hi, Raymond, so let's see if we can get him to say just a little bit more this go.
Hello, folks. How you doing? I'm having a blast. I swear I wish there were more of you could be here with Shaziz. I mean, we are having a blast playing around with lighting up fluorescent lights wirelessly and playing around with X13 motors and sonic humidifiers. I mean, folks, we're making some nice, really good videos with this stuff. You're really going to enjoy it when we put it on YouTube.
Hey, Raymond,
yes,
have
sir?
You ever seen the sonic cleaners that they use for jewelry?
Do what now?
Sonic cleaners they use for jewelry?
Oh, yes. Yes. In fact, I had one here a while back when I used to buy and sell jewelry on the internet. And those things are really nice.
Well, I was really impressed with that little sonic mister that he's got out there because it basically breaks down the water molecules, which would make it easier to use. We're going to try some tests with some high voltage and see if we can ignite a little bit of hydrogen out of that deal.
Good luck.
So we're going to... Yeah, I've actually done it with the Beckett oil burner igniter hitting it from a dead ground onto a bucket of water, and you can hear the popping of the hydrogen going on. So now that it's broke down in a really fine mist, hopefully we won't blow ourselves off the map, but it's something we're going to try.
Yeah,
have you thought of a way of you breaking it down and then collecting the hydrogen and oxygen into two separate cylinders?
Yeah, I even brought some fluorescent light fixtures that have ballast in them. They're 6-to-1 step-up transformers. We're going to try to see if we can't get up to about 40 or 60,000 volts.
You really know that, Raymond?
Huh?
You got to talk louder.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. I brought some fluorescent light fixtures for Shaziz, and we're going to take the ballast out and because they're 6-to-1 step-up transformers, and we're going to try to see if we can't get up to about 60 or 80,000 volts of electricity. And very low amperage, and see if he can make some plasma out of this fog. This sonic humidifier, it actually makes a fog. I mean, we're talking about it reduces water to the molecular level. It doesn't make a mist, and it doesn't make a vapor. A vapor is water that's already expanded. This reduces the water to a molecular level, just like a real fog. And if anybody's ever paid attention, and you drive your vehicle in a fog, the thicker the fog, the better your vehicle runs.
Have you checked to see if that sonic deal would actually light up a fluorescent bulb?
No, I haven't.
That'd be an interesting deal to check out because it's got some probably pretty high frequency if it's shaking that water like it's doing.
Didn't think about that.
Anyway, that's another deal on there. But
the X-13.
The X-13 that he brought down.
Just the thing about the fog. Isn't it ironic that your vehicle runs better in a fog, but the thicker the fog, you're slower you're supposed to drive.
Right.
Yeah, well, he was also talking about basically putting that up underneath your hood to where it'd be like driving in the fog. So even when it's not foggy outside and you had that mist going up underneath the hood of your car, it'd be sucked into the intake and seeing how it runs.
Okay, the reason that your vehicle runs better in a fog is because the fog, like I said, is water reduced to a molecular level. It's still water. And your gasoline and your air in your engine, when it burns, it explodes and expands 450 times its size. This excess pressure drives your piston down and moves your vehicle. Water, however, when it turns to steam, it expands 1,600 times its size. This is 3.7 times more power. But again, water has, as you increase the pressure, you have to increase the temperature of the water in order to get it to boil and turn to steam. But the heat in an engine with gasoline is more than sufficient heat.
Yeah, so I'm seeing some really good potential with that kind of deal there going on.
I've done it.
So now we got all kinds of experiments to try to cram in on his visit here. So basically, he brought down an X-13. All right, and I've been listening to Ryan and Terry and them talk about these X-13s for quite some time. And I watched him doing some pretty amazing things with them, pulsing them off of one of the phases off the motor with everything from 9-volt batteries to even a little bit higher, and actually getting it to work as a motor generator and basically run it off of, you know, low voltage. But I was in the process of looking around to try to find some of them direct drive or smart drive motors that's in the newer washing machines, and I was going to build a system with that. But now that I've seen this X-13, I don't even need to look at those other ones anymore, because the way that it's built, if you go back and look at the video that I just did, the two must-see videos where I'm running a hard drive motor, essentially it's the same kind of setup with more stators inside there, and the rotor itself is a magnet rotor. And so I was sitting there just barely flicking this thing with my finger, and I was getting as high as 20 some odd volts off of this deal. So it's
29 one time,
just sitting there flicking it. Of course, when I put some vice grips on that thing and put it underneath a load, when you put it on a load, then you can feel a little bit of drag to it. But after you get past that first initial drag, it gets easier to spin. So I'm fully convinced that thing on the right electric motor could put out some really serious arc. So it's really quite impressive. You got anything you want?
No, that's right. You covered it.
So, have you seen those motors yet, guys? Nobody?
Not me.
Well, apparently there's a little part that's underneath some material inside the end cap of that doggone motor that goes bad. It's like a $2 or $3 part, and when they go bad, they just chuck the motor instead of repairing the doggone thing.
They can't because of the epoxy over it.
Yeah, apparently they epoxy over it so you can't see the little circuit board inside there. But when they go bad, they just pull it out, replace the motor, and put something different in there. And they throw these doggone things in the trash, man. But they made a mistake when they put one of those in my hands, because now I know what I'm going to do with that thing. It's going to be some interesting videos coming up out of that. I mean, they're really impressive motors. If you look inside there at the stator and the rotor inside that thing, the direct drives have the magnets on the outer hub of the deal, and this one has them right in the center of the stator. And so I just can't wait to do some more experiments with that thing. So, where'd you guys go on me? I'm running out of things to say on it. Either way, they're really impressive, man. I mean, that kind of voltage off of that.
All right, the beautiful part about the X-13 You can spin it really fast under almost no load and get extreme voltage, or you can put a lot of power to it and turn it really slow and get a lot, an unbelievable amount of amperage. You can go either way with this thing. It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, what's that bridge rectifier you brought too?
Oh, it's I brought Shaziz a bridge rectifier. It's 1,000 volt capacity and 100 amps.
So
three phase bridge rectifier, a metal covered, and it's already got it. It's built in heat sink and everything.
Yeah, it's a really quite impressive little setup, man. I really appreciate that deal.
Almost took up the whole house.
Oh, yeah, he also brought out, I guess there was a guy that was salvaging aluminum off of some solar panels, and he brought out these rolled up solar panels when he got done tearing the doggone solar panels apart to get the aluminum off of them. He just rolled the other pieces up in pretty much a roll. And crazy enough, even after you unroll these doggone things, what did you say, they were like 400 watts?
Originally, they're 450 watt solar panels. And originally, they're 450 watt solar panels, but they were hail damaged. So what they did is strip the solar panel off of the aluminum frame, salvage the aluminum frame, and then friend of mine, John Huddleston down in Glen Rose, Texas, he buys these things in bulk. And the even damage, they'll put out 200, 250, some of them as high as 300 watts per panel. And the cost is almost nothing. Anything less than 250 watts, he doesn't even want. So I made a deal with him, and he wants a jukebox, and I've got an old one. And I've made a trade with him. Everything that he doesn't want, I get for the jukebox. And he's got what he's got right now that I'm going down next week to get. He said, bring a trailer, because you can't carry them all the way in a pickup truck. So I'm going to give about 10 or 15 of them to Shaziz.
Well, I'm excited all the heck about that, because I'm going to roll them out, build a frame for them, and re-coat the glass portions that are cracked, and see how much I can power with some old recycled solar panels.
Well, if you're going to do that when I come, I'll not only just bring the solar panels, but I'll bring you the material to build the frames with. And I'll bring my little 110 wire welding machine, and we can build the frames right here and show people how to do it.
Yeah, cool. That'd be another good video.
I've sent the X13 sort of links on to a couple of people, and they don't actually know what it is, and I didn't know what it was either. But I had a quick look there to give a bit more of a clarified definition of what the X13 motor is, and it seems that it's a constant torque motor.
Oh, that's probably what that ACM stood for.
See, I mean, we're using terminology which few people seem to be aware of, but most people haven't got a clue what we're talking about.
Well,
so if somebody could give a much greater description of exactly what an X13 is and what it means, that may be helpful.
Yeah, I'll have to do an addendum to that video and put that information in there, but as soon as I get that video up, you'll see what they look like and how good they function. And so, with that said, it's going to be definitely something everybody will want to look into, because right off the store shelf, no modifications to it whatsoever. I mean, this thing's putting out some pretty pretty amazing power.
Well, if you give me 10 seconds, I've looked up what is an X13 motor, and it seems to give a reasonable description. It's important to understand what an X13 motor is and why they are used. GE ECM by Regal Beloit introduced the constant torque motor model X13 to the residential HVAC industry, split systems and packaging systems 5 ton or less, in 2006. The term constant torque defines the type or style of ECM as it is programmed to function as. The X13 is constructed in one piece with two components of any ECM, the motor control and the motor, housed inside one motor shell. It is programmed to provide a constant level of torque, i.e. power, for the motor. This is a multi-tap motor with the ability to have from 1 to 5 program levels of torque, similar to the speeds of a PSC induction motor. It is a cross between the full-blown ECM motor and the standard PSC motor. Right, that's just the basic rundown of it. There's a lot of words there that probably I don't understand, and maybe a few other people don't either, but it's a starting point. It's a programmable motor that will give you varying levels of torque.
Yeah, it also has a warning label on there because it has built-in capacitors in there, so even after you shut the doggone thing off, you're supposed to let it run down those capacitors.
Before you
seems like this been around for a while.
Steve, could you send Shaziz a link to that place, that site you read, because he understands a lot of electrical jargon, and he might be able to read it and understand the motor better before we even start trying to experiment with it.
Done, mate. I'll stick it into the super chat as well so people can have a read to it themselves.
Cool. I just had Muddy Muddy Mud Man on there. Are you there yet, Scott?
Yeah.
Yay. We got it. We got the Muddy Mud Man there. Yeah, I checked out that X13 when he brought it down there. Man, I am sold. I'm telling you what, I'm in love with this thing. I can't wait to do some stuff with that. Plus, I'm sending him back with that cruddy version of the ceiling fan motor that I made at your advice. And you can see how I went about it. I used ceramic magnets inside there, and it put out some voltage. I think I got like 4 or 5 volts, but it wasn't nowhere near what I was seeing with the other. That.
No, Scott, he put in ceramic magnets, and because they're weaker, it's easier to turn. There's a very, very little cogging, so you can spin it faster by hand. And I mean, just with his fingers spinning it around, he was knocking out a 12, 14, 15 volts. I mean, just by hand. I mean, it's unreal. The thing is, he can spin it faster, easier, so therefore he gets more electricity with a weaker magnet. I mean, it's amazing. I've got it in the truck right now. He wants me to bring it down and have you take it apart and look at it and experiment with it and see what you think.
Yeah, you reverse engineer my reverse engineer of the reverse engineered fan.
There you go.
But, yeah.
Over there?
Yeah, he's here live in the lab. We're sharing a mic. Here he is.
Yeah, hey, man, you're right about being up here at night. Back in Louisville, it's 85 degrees at night. Here, last night, I thought I was going to have to go get a sweater.
Yeah, it's chilly down here, man. So that's why Missouri, some people call it the land of misery, because it's either hotter than Hades or it's colder than Hades. One of the two. It's like over extremes. Every once in a while you get a happy medium and everybody's happy until, you know, the next season when the frostbite kicks in or the heat wave. Don't everybody jump the microphone at once. Wouldn't want anybody to chip a tooth. I mean, that's like good for radio, that silence.
Well, Shaziz, I've never feared Beelzebub when I've got my asbestos underpants on.
Oh, well, I'm going to be down there trying to sell some ice water and cold lemonade or something like that. I'll probably get kicked out. or fined by the EPA, who we know is definitely going to be down there.
Right.
After what they did. Polluting the planet.
No, Shaziz, they have permission.
Oh, okay, so they're in the square? Oh, man.
They'll fine you for selling that lemonade and ice water, because only the EPA is licensed to sell that down there.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly, Tom. They've got permission. You don't.
Yep. Hey, Shaziz?
Yeah.
You were talking about running some high voltage in there and seeing if you could crack some water, right?
Yeah.
You got a way to turn that high voltage into DC voltage?
It is.
Yeah, it is DC.
Pulsating DC.
Okay. Well, I want you to do me a favor and try a little something out and tell me how it goes. Don't use high voltage to crack the water. Put your bare metal in there with low voltage, but drop a plate, like a plate that you're running low voltage through, and then drop a second plate right up against that has really high voltage running to it, but coat the second plate so it's like a capacitor. You like spray paint the whole thing down or something so none of the electricity can leak out of it, and then put it right up against that plate that's actually pumping the electrons into the water to crack it and see if you can break that water a little more easily. Because once you charge a plate, a capacitor plate, the power stops flowing. So you're not using any more electricity. All you do is basically use enough to fill that plate up with that high voltage potential, and it's going to still attract the side of the molecule that is inverse to that. So if it's a positive charge, it's going to attract the negative side of the water molecule to the plate that's in front of it, that you're putting like the 12 volts or the 1 volt or whatever into it. Like, you should literally be able to charge that plate up and see a massive difference, if I'm right.
Cool.
With the bubble that bubbling that it gives off, you'll see like a few bubbles from like 1 volt, and then all of a sudden when you kick that up and charge that high voltage into those plates behind the low voltage plates, should start fuming, like literally just tons and tons of bubbles just coming off of it.
Okay, Thomas, I did an experiment about 5 years ago, and I took two stainless steel plates, put a plastic spacer between them, 1/8 of an inch, and I hooked DC to them and measured how much HHO they were actually making. And then I took two really strong neodymium magnets, put one on each side in an attraction field, and if you hooked your positive and negative up one way, they would make less HHO. If you hooked it up the other way, they would make 50% to 60% more HHO with the same amount of current. So
right.
It is a magnetism of the negative and positive that actually pulls the water molecule apart. And if you use neodymium magnets as an assist, it actually produces more power.
Right. And but the thing is, though, comparing neodymium magnet attraction to say 10,000 volt attraction on DC, 10,000 volts of DC, is, you know, you're basically talking about like the it dwarfs even the difference between the neodymium and the iron magnets that you were talking about earlier.
Right.
So we should see a massive difference. Like, I mean, you might even see something that would turn into a runaway situation if you get enough voltage potential charged up in those plates that are behind the actual bare metal plates that are doing the actual work of cracking the water.
Well, I'm seeing this work out pretty good. We'll give it a shot and see what happens.
Yeah, like I said, you know, even some good old spray paint, you want to use clear, should work fine for that, for creating a barrier for that. You may have to do a little testing, you know, like dump it in the water there by itself on either side, and charge your voltage up until you see bubbles start coming off it. Because when you see bubbles coming off it, that means basically you have broken down your dielectric and there's actually electrons poking through that material, so you know what voltage you can go up to.
Do you think that a negative ion generator, the way that they use them in the air purifier systems, because they actually got plates already built in them, do you think that that would suffice for what we're talking about?
It could. So,
because I've got a few of those air purifiers that I got for the high voltage portion of it, because it actually has a step, I don't know what you call it, the voltage multiplier circuit on it.
I've got one that...
Right. Well, and I'll tell you right now, I got my idea for this
30 minutes, you can
from static speakers. If you've ever seen a standard speaker that uses a magnet, the static speaker uses the magnetic field that's created on a capacitor plate. So you literally have two capacitor plates that one of them you pulse power into and then retract it out of it. The other one is just constantly charged with one particular charge, so it's always in that one state. Like you fill it up with electrons, so it always has a negative field, and then you can fluctuate the power going into the second plate, making it positive and negative, and it makes it move back and forth away from and then toward the negatively charged plate.
Yeah, those static speakers that you're talking about, everybody out there, Google up high voltage or static speakers and look at some of these things. They're pretty incredible, that the sound that they get out of these doggone things.
Well, and yeah, if the plate that's being constantly charged, the charge is maintained on it, is charged up and coated properly, you can cut that then and seal that off, and it maintains its charge for quite a while. So it's not that energy intensive to run one of those things. That's why I'm thinking, since you're not actually causing electron flow to pass through it, the only energy you're going to lose, if that is assisting it, is in restocking it from leakage. You know, restocking the electrons on that plate whenever you have some that leak off, to make sure you maintain that high
high voltage potential there.
Well, actually, I could take either a block of aluminum or a pretty thick plate of aluminum and hook one of the legs of that igniter to it and use the radiant energy to then in turn charge the capacitor portion of it. And
right.
So well, I can use the same system that I'm going to ignite it with to do it.
Right. Well, as I say, if you want a higher strength dielectric, so you can get less distance between those two plates, so that that electromagnetic field on the capacitor plate can have a stronger effect on the secondary plate, the bare plate. You just go ahead and, like I said, get yourself a bunch of styrofoam and some xylene. You know, go pick up some xylene from the hardware store, even a little can of it, and you put it in a glass jar and fill it up with that styrene. Just let it break it down, and then dip your plates in that. Treat that whole thing like you do when you're making candles, hand dip candles. You just dip it in the container, hang out, cover the container so it doesn't dry out, but hang it out, let it dry off, and then dip it in again real quick and hang it out, let it dry out some more. Just keep drying it off like that.
Raymond had a question about whether or not acetone would do the
as good.
I think it would work, but I think you'd probably be spending a lot more time waiting on that, because acetone doesn't dry as fast as xylene. Xylene is probably about as fast as I think you can get that to dry off without it interfering with the shape of the surface of the substance. When the xylene dries, I know this from experience, the styrene that broke down from the styrofoam, when it dries out, it's crystal clear and, you know, smooth as like a lake with no air on it. I mean, it is just like mirror smooth.
Thomas, what is the latent heat of xylene?
What's that?
The latent heat of xylene? What is it?
I still didn't hear what you said. The what?
Latent heat of xylene.
Latent heat?
Yes.
I don't even know what that means.
Okay,
I'll have to look that up.
It's the amount of heat it takes to change 1 pound of a liquid into a vapor. Like water is 840-some BTUs per pound. Alcohol is 400-and-something. Acetone is 223 BTUs per pound to turn it into a vapor.
I've got the things down there for you.
Huh?
Are you talking about the melting point, the boiling point?
No, I'm talking about the vaporization point.
Which is the boiling point.
No.
Why would you want to vaporize it?
Well, that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to turn the liquid into a gas, in other words, to vaporize it and get it off so the plastic stays there.
Huh. That sounds like some mad science for...
it's practically insoluble in water. It's got a melting point of -447.4 Celsius.
What is this boiling?
All right. Let me look real quick, too. Because there's two different kinds of xylene. You've got an M and a P xylene. So you want to make sure you're looking at the right one.
Okay, what is the actual boiling point at sea level of xylene?
The xylene is a dimethylbenzene, an aromatic hydrocarbon.
Okay,
mixture consisting of a benzene ring with two methyl groups.
Okay, what is the boiling
point? No, xylene is actually its own... I mean, when you say that, it sounds like it's just basically something else, but it's not. It's actually its own compound, though. But when you break down crude oil, that's one of the three things you get out of it. I can't remember what they call it now, but you get benzene, xylene, and toluene.
Okay.
Comes from the compound, and each one of them is very similar.
Okay.
But they have something different about each one of them that gives them their own properties that make them useful in different ways.
Right. All liquids have a boiling point. All right, from the boiling point, you can have a liquid at its boiling point, and you can have a gas at its boiling point. But when you have a liquid at its boiling point, you need more heat to raise that, change that liquid to a vapor at the exact same temperature. It does not increase in temperature. Like water, for example, at sea level, 212 degrees. Well, you can have water at 212 degrees, but you must add 840-some BTUs per pound in order to turn that water to steam at 212 degrees. But now, all liquids are the same as water in that we're talking about sea level. So if you pull a vacuum on xylene, you can probably get it to boil at like 35 or 40 degrees. Now, what the interesting thing is, you need to know how many BTUs it takes to turn it to a gas.
Right. I was going to say, you want to slow down for a minute on getting it to dry something that you've dissolved in a smooth state as opposed to it being all crinkly or being fuzzy looking, so it looks like an etched surface, right, a matte finish. It is dependent on how fast it dries. So if you dry it too fast, it's not going to be smooth like you want for this particular experiment. I mean, the smoother the surface, the better. So you really want to just set that out. In fact, if it's a little humid out and it slows down the drying process, that'll be perfect. I don't know why. I've dried some stuff with xylene or with acetone before, and even though it dries slower, for some reason it comes out fuzzy looking on the surface. It doesn't come out smooth, so maybe there's something else in it that's causing certain portions of it to dry faster than other portions, and you end up with little buildups.
But essentially, that's going to be the best dielectric between the plates.
Tom, you were right there about the different forms of xylene. From what I can see here, it's got three isometric forms, O, M, and P, which specify to which carbon atoms of the benzene ring and two methyl groups are attached. By counting the carbon atoms around the ring, starting from one of the ring carbons bonded to a methyl group and counting towards the second methyl group, the O isomer, as the IUPAC name of 1.2, 1.3, or 1.4, and that basically designates the various different forms. P isomer is the most industrially sought after because it can be oxidized to terephthalic acid, whatever the hell that is. Now, I'm going from Wikipedia here, guys, so I'm just trying to find answers to some of the questions we're asking.
Alrighty then.
Let's see here.
So,
I'll drop that link in for you there, Tom. You know a hell of a lot more about it than I do.
You still got
I'll say, as far as links go, here's a link on the latent. Let's see here. Make sure I'm in the right one. So many rooms here.
I mean, the chemical and physical properties respective to the isomers, i.e. whether it's 1.2, 1.3, or 1.4.
And the boiling this is the heat of vaporization of P xylene, so I couldn't find anything on M or O.
Alright, cool. So anyway, on a slightly different subject, there's a new program that Steve wants people to check out. You want to tell everybody what that program is there for? I'm thinking it would be good for the virtual lab thing, because you said we could get to like 14 or 15 people in at the same time?
Well, being a paranoid little bunny, I'm always kind of aware that anything that you do on the internet, somebody somewhere is listening. So I was thinking that Skype is owned by Microsoft, so it's not really secure. And I was trying to look for more encrypted methods of communication, and looking through the various different applications, there's a piece of software called Uvu, and I put the link into the chat when they first joined. This will enable 12 concurrent video chats. So you can have 12 people sending audio and video at the same time, and it has the opportunity for you to be able to sit there and stream the YouTube video with 12 people sitting in the room watching it.
Wow, that'd come in really handy there.
Yeah. You can record directly from your session and upload it directly to YouTube as well. So if you are conducting an experiment, I'm not sure if you can stream it live, but you can certainly upload it after the session is finished.
Well, there you go. That would be a good start to get virtual labs going, and we could test it out on there, and if it works, maybe even incorporate it to the radio show as well. What do you think?
Well, this is the standard package. 12 consecutive people with audio and video as a separate chat box, so it doesn't get all like messed up. You can send it with these files.
You gotta come closer to the mic, buddy. You sound like you're hollering from the other end of a sewer pipe.
Yeah, I think there's a Linux version as well.
Cool.
But it's also available on Android and iPhone, so if people want to get involved and they've got a camera on their iPhone, then they can probably set it up on there and use that too. I know I'm not a great fan of iPhones and Androids, but, you know, I'm not here to judge what other people decide to use.
Well,
it's not my place.
The key is doing like Thomas said, networking. And since we obviously all can't travel to each other's place, I mean, then that sounds to me like it'd be awesome because you could, you know, troubleshoot ideas right there live stream with each other. And then, like you said, you could upload your results to YouTube. So I think that would be a really good start. Man, I'm excited about you at least checking
it
out.
Can't hear him now.
Huh?
Couldn't hear you.
You're drifting off.
Drifting off?
You've been doing it all over the show.
Yeah, I got this doggone cruddy mic, this old headset. I need to get me a USB mic for this because Skype is on a different microphone than the radio show is on, and you guys are fed from one computer to the next computer. That's why you can't hear the music when we're on a break or something like that.
I can tell you how to cure that microphone problem. There, you take your vacuum cleaner hose, about halfway down, you poke a hole and you stuff the microphone in it, and then Boomer takes one end of the hose, and you take the other end of the hose so you can both talk with equal volume.
Fantastic.
Have all
that
freedom.
Huh. Sort of a wide pipe.
Yeah.
We could put on some Israeli gas mask and talk inside the mask where it sounds like we're inside of a barrel when we're talking.
Right.
What I will do is I'll put a little request out there for the people on this radio chat and for awake radio chat. If anybody fancies installing this application, and if they know any more, if they have any more knowledge about its security flaws, then come play with it and let us know, guys. I mean, we always appreciate your feedback.
Yeah, definitely. If anybody out there checks that program out and finds any negatives or positives for it, let us know because we're trying to get virtual labs up and running so everybody can do some real-time experiments. And the key about that is so we can get the interaction between people that maybe not necessarily wanting to do experiments, but wanting to learn more about what we're doing. And so you can be able to talk real-time live to your favorite researchers and stuff. And we're also going to build different categories for, you know, different alternative energy devices, such as, you know, if you're interested in Bedini or Tesla technology or Stanmeyer's hydrogen cells and stuff like that. It'll give you a wide variety of different chats that you could be involved with. So that's I'm looking forward to getting something like that set up.
No, we still need to get that get a place and fix it up, like I said, so that the whole thing looks like the inside of a star base or a starship and do all our experiments from there.
Well, I'm excited about that as well.
Fill it up with like 20 cameras all streaming live online all the time. Anybody can tune in anytime they want and watch, you know.
What would it take to get a guy like Thomas Anderson and a guy like Muddy down here along with Raymond and possibly even if we could get Steve through the TSA?
How's your green card, Steve? How's your green card, Steve?
I don't care. I have an objection to people touching my... as you might want to call it. That's for my wife only. I've made an agreement.
Yeah, don't touch his junk, man. Hey, and we could paint him a green card and ship it over to him in the mail. When he gets to the TSA, he could show that green card to him.
Well, if they want to know if I've got any professional qualifications, I can show them your master's in mad science.
Yeah, there you go. You get your diploma. And for those of you who don't know what...
A diploma, a master's.
Yeah, a master's. Cool.
A diploma. I mean, that's community college, that is.
All right, right. And
master's means that you're an expert at talking out your...
Yeah. All right, well, listen, for those of you out there who are interested in mad science, if you go over to shazizradio.com/superchat.html, right above the radio players, on that page, there's a button that says Attend the University of Mad Science. You go there, you take the test. If you pass the test, you print you out a diploma, and there you go. You're a mad scientist. So it's there for the taking. And it's a really hard test because Muddy failed it the first time.
Yes, I did. But I had a reason why.
But the best thing about it is
asking, but that's not the way it's worded.
Yeah.
So, but I have to tell the truth. So
yeah,
I'm told the truth. I failed it.
If Muddy failed it, I know daggone well I couldn't pass it.
Well, the good thing about it is...
You did say to me that you thought it was the website for doing your IRS tax returns at the time.
Yeah, the good thing about it is it's only one question, and you can take the test as many times as you want, so if you can't pass it the first two times, you can take it, 20, 30 more times after that. Whatever.
Well, like Microsoft.
What's the question? Are your parents?
Yeah, it's a new and improved question. Married, now, that's right. Hold on.
All right, hold on.
He went back to reworded it.
We're going to do something unprecedented here. All right, we're going to see who's smarter, Muddy or Raymond.
Oh,
okay.
Muddy's a lot smarter.
All right. Ray.
All right. So we're clicking on the button for the test. All right. Question number one. Here you go, Raymond. Read it out loud.
Question. Do you believe everything you hear and repeat it and never think outside the box for yourself? Whoa.
Yes or no?
I never repeat everything I say.
So your answer is no?
No.
Okay. Da 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 da! Congratulations, you graduated.
For different parts of the question.
He graduated. You said download your diploma right there.
I'll email that to me.
All right.
Congratulations.
Well, we got a new University of Mad Science diploma recipient, Raymond. And all we got to do is download this printed out for him, and it's signed by Shaziz on there. So there you go, folks. Go over there, take the test, see if you can pass.
I'm framing that and hanging it in my office.
I don't even care if you look over somebody else's shoulder when you're taking the test. All right.
Man, I can't believe that.
Well, Raymond passed it. Okay, so we got a new mad scientist out there.
And
he's certified. The only one that failed it.
He's got probably the only one that ever will fail it.
I look, did the right thing.
Yeah, you did. Well, we still love you, man. Okay, so I know that Steve took it, and he got his master's degree in mad science, so... There you
I
go.
Master's degree.
Huh? Yeah, we're going to have upgrades. We're going to have to put upgrades on there, Steve, so everybody else can get their master's degree.
I want my master's degree.
I'm looking for a PhD course so I can call myself doctor.
Okay, that's cool. We'll do that too. We'll have all the PhDs and the ADDs and the.
ADD photos.
Yeah.
All right, so well, there you go.
The PhD stood for particularly hairy dude. Because most professors have beards.
Yeah, you got a point there. Most ones calling them doctors look kind of Bigfootish. Is that a word? It is now.
From the lexicon of mad science.
That's right. That came from the head of the University of Mad Science. Crazy old mad science is. And if I said it, it's got to be there. So it's in the book somewhere. If it ain't, we got markers and Sharpies and pencils.
Got it.
Now, guys, you do realize that Shaziz is the headmaster of the University of Mad Science, and if you drop a bomb on these radio shows, you have to stand outside his office.
Yeah, that's it. And it's like the old nuns' academies where you go to school, and if you smart off in school or back talk, they whop you on the knuckles with a big old long yardstick. Pow! And you'll say, hey,
so you're the humane version. You don't make them stand out there in a hunched position while they're holding a book with nothing under them.
No, I'm not into torture. But, hey...
Sounds kinky to me.
That's what taxes are for, to fund it.
you got to do what you got to do, man. Anyway, so you heard it live here. We got a new member of the Mad Science.
Come on, get it back to your mic, buddy. Kitty. We can't hear you.
Sure, you can hear me. I can hear me.
We need to get him one of them wireless microphones.
No.
Yeah, well, this one would probably be better if I wasn't moving around so much.
Great.
How many Tesla coils have you got sitting next to you, Thomas? No, I think a wired headset would be far more suitable for Shazoo's in his lab.
He'll put the antenna that goes up far away from his head so he don't have to suffer the radio wave.
Well, the problem with this particular microphone is I've been tethered to it for a while, and if you have to get up and go across the room and forget to take it off your head, then you
What? Speak up, boy.
Yeah, 90% of what
it's like being on a leash, man.
There he is.
All right, so maybe I was talking to the wrong hole of the microphone.
Careful how you say that.
Yeah, well, anyway, like I said, if you're tethered to a headset with a cord on it and decide you got to get up and go across the room to check the printer or something else for any reason, you got to remember to take the headset off before you go. And
I've joined my cord several times.
Yeah, and they don't last very long when you do that.
Now, Radio Shack has a 20-foot extension.
Well, I'd trip over it anyway.
Yeah.
I'd step on it and give myself a kink in my neck.
What's Radio Shack? You talking about that place that used to be around, but now they're not around anymore?
Yeah.
Right, they don't even sell crystal diodes, which is... it's Radio Shack. Radio Shack was a game shack. They had Radio Shack where they built it, and everything was built. They don't even have the first component of a radio.
Yeah, but listen, guys, look.
They will not sell crystal detector diodes.
I went into a severe bout of depression when Radio Shack went down because I was going there for convenience purposes, getting little electronic parts that I needed. Now I got to wait till I order it off of eBay. Which is a lot cheaper, by the way, but either way, if you want it now, you don't want to wait for somebody to ship it out from China.
Yeah.
Because it's mad science waits for no man.
That's right, and that's one of the most frustrating, me and Raymond was talking about this yesterday, that's one of the most frustrating portions of the whole mad sciences, is you know how to do something, you want it done now, and you ain't got the parts to do it. When he pulled up yesterday, coming in from Texas, I was out there sitting at the picnic table doing an experiment with water.
Hydraulics.
And kind of like hydraulics, but either way, I needed check valves that I didn't have at the time to run this particular experiment. See, the experiment that I'm running with water is the same thing you could also do with electricity. See, the whole key about it is that nature always tries to balance itself out, whether it be electricity or water, either or. And so if you can continuously keep nature off balance, nature will continuously try to put it back into balance and balance that energy out till it's finally level, and therefore you have a dead battery. When your battery is fully charged, that's essentially being the battery is off balance, and nature wants to balance that out. And until you give that battery a path for those electrons to flow and balance themselves back out, then that battery will stay charged. But once you put a motor on it or a load of any kind, it will then in turn start to do that balancing process. So that's why I was trying to use water, because if you can do it with water, you can do it with electricity, vice versa. What do you guys think?
Well, always said pressure is voltage. Current is current.
Yeah, and by using...
It's got a current.
By using an outside force...
You put a dam on it, you say there's a lot of pressure behind that dam because you stopped the current.
Yeah. And while, like the water
put
coming...
Put a hole in that dam, halfway down, and it's going to kind of piss out a certain distance. Put it down lower, it's going to go another distance. How big you make the holes says how much fluid is going that far.
Yeah.
That's why it's like your voltage times your amps. It has more power. It moved this much water that far, or a whole lot of water that far.
And using the
distance.
Using the Venturi effect, if you put a Y pipe in that same hole, the water will come out, and as long as that one end of that Y pipe is above the water level, then you will actually start dragging atmosphere in with the water, and so you'll be mixing air pressure with water pressure. And then inside of a closed container, you'll be building up pressure inside that container. So that's what I was using, because just like transistors and resistors and diodes, You got valves, check valves, and you know, things to basically adjust the volume of water and the pressure, and by changing the size of the pipe. So everything that you do with normal plumbing, you can do with electricity. So you know, a diode, for instance, would be the equivalence of a check valve in plumbing, because it only allows the flow in one direction. You see what I'm saying?
Yep, it doesn't have to be an off-on valve. It could be like an analog valve.
Yeah.
More pressure comes to it, then the more current comes out.
And a transistor would be the equivalence of a pressure relief valve. So when the pressure builds up to a certain extent, it will trip the switch that will allow the water to flow. Well, in the electricity, that when the pressure builds up on the first part of the diode, then it allows electricity to flow. So everything that you can visualize and how plumbing actually function is the basics of how electricity functions as well. And so if the Venturi effect will work with water bringing in atmosphere, then the Venturi effect will work with electricity by bringing in energy from the vacuum that they keep talking about. You see what I'm talking about? So that's why I was doing that experiment whenever he rolled up. But the frustration point came from, I know how to do this, but I don't have everything that I need to do it, and that's aggravating. You know, out here in the alternative energy community, not everybody has access to like a CNC mill like Thomas talks about, or you know, a metal lathe or something like that, or a 3D printer. But if you had access to all them tools and you had access to all these brilliant minds in the same shop, that's what I keep talking about building the dream team. We talk about networking. If we could get everybody into a lab and have that lab like what Thomas was talking about, where it actually looks like you're inside a doggone spaceship, you know, it kind of gives a motivation factor. You know, it's something to be said about the kind of room you're working in.
Yes, it is.
As opposed to a messy lab or a really clean lab that you got plenty of room, you're not falling over stuff. But put all these brilliant minds together in a complex such as that, with all the tools and all the resources, there is absolutely no reason whatsoever why we couldn't have, at the very least, alternative energy, clean energy, renewable energy. I'm going to go as far as to saying we could literally build a free energy device within less than 30 days in that kind of environment. What do you guys think?
I think we need a back case to this.
I think you're absolutely 100% correct, Shaziz. 100%.
Well, and I love the whole bat cave idea, too, because that'd be kind of cool. Like, I could jump out there in the closet, slide down the pole right into my bat suit, and jump down in there, and then Steve would be on the other slide, sliding down, and he'd be like Batman or Robin, and then we'd have Buddy and Raymond coming in there. Which one of y'all want to be the Joker?
Catwoman.
Well,
Raymond just said he's going to be Catwoman.
What are you looking at me for?
I was just thinking that I do not want to see Shazir sliding down a pole in latex.
Yeah, the only problem I have with the superheroes, and somebody answer me this question. Riddle me this, Batman. Why do all the doggone superheroes out there, including Superman, wear their underwear on the outside of their suit?
Really? That is a good question.
Fashion. Well, I guess if you're Superman, who's going to mouth off about you? Hey, man, your BBDs are hanging out. Oh, really? You want some? You know what I'm saying? Because you're Superman. You could outrun them, you could outfly them, and you got the strength to lift a train. And so, you know, ain't nobody going to come up and question the fact that your underwear is on the outside of your Superman suit, you know, or your cape.
Maybe it
doesn't have an emblem.
Have you noticed that every superhero has a super enemy?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and even the super enemies are wearing their underwear. There must be some sort of trend in the superhero deal, you know?
I want to see Superman give an anti-hero a decent wedgie.
There you go.
Yeah. Oh, you might have hit it, Steve. That may be the reason why they do it, because they're just daring somebody out to give. I'll give Superman a wedgie. I'll try it.
Well, no, Superman would give you an atomic wedgie.
Yeah, he would too, wouldn't he? But hey, at least I go down in history being the only man who ever gave Superman a wedgie.
Well,
you know?
Yeah, you can try, mate. You can try.
I'll sneak up on him. Hey, how's it going, brother?
Chuck Norris did it once, but Superman doesn't like to talk about it.
You know, I was in Atlanta, Georgia, and they've got this restaurant that's on the top. I was in Atlanta, Georgia quite some time ago, quite a few years back, and I was in this restaurant on top of this super high skyscraper, and there was these two drunks sitting at the bar. And one I was telling the other says, man, I don't mind drinking up this high because the updraft from the wind, if you get drunk and you stumble and fall out the wind just blows you right back up in the window. And the other drunk says, that's crazy, man. And the first drunk said, well, let me show you. So he runs and he jumps out the window, and sure enough, the wind caught him and just brought him right back in, and he landed on his feet. He says, see, I told you. The other drunk said, second drunk said, well, let me try that. He jumped out the window and goes, splat. As the first drunk goes back and sits down at the bar, and the bartender walks over and says, you know, you're a real butthole when you're drunk, Superman.
Yeah, man. Superman ain't be doing stuff like that. Now he's getting a wedgie if I ever see him.
Yeah, nobody's ever seen Superman drunk either.
Yeah. So that's all you need is a Superman drunk, because he'd be running amok, boy. Anyway, I don't know how we got from X-13 motors all the way to Superman being drunk and wearing his skivvies on the outside of his Superman suit, but that was a legit question. You got to know things like that, you know, if you're going to be a superhero.
It is. Stephen Given in the Mad Science chat, as usual, has put a really good link in there. It's MIT figured out how to 3D print using glass instead of plastic.
Wow, that'd be impressive.
Why not? Why not?
That's something that you should talk about a little bit.
Hey, that would be cool. I wonder if they could print me the perfect chamber that has all the ports to put all the gas inserts in there.
Okay, the system uses a pair of heated chambers stacked atop one another. The 1900 degree F upper chamber acting as a kiln cartridge in the lower chamber, serving to anneal the constructed structures, which basically means make them usable. Researchers at MIT Media Lab collaborated with the school's mechanical engineering department, the MIT Glass Lab, and the WIS Institute to create the 3D GP. The team believes the method could eventually lead to better quality and less expensive fiber optics.
Well, I'd like to see them build a plasma reactor with that. I wonder if the glass is it clear or what?
Need to look into it a bit further, but it's definitely a decent link for Mad Science.
Yeah, because
what if you could mix other things with the glass to make it conductive, semiconductive, and P or N? It'd be pretty cool to build the structure.
Are you channeling
me?
Kind of like tempered glass.
Oh, so yeah, you're channeling me, buddy?
but just think about it. I mean, see a lot of glass work where they blow the glass and stuff like that. Ships, very intricate and stuff.
You could put lead or uranium in the glass.
Cool. Just make a little radio out here, you know, with just printing glass with different stuff in it. I think it'd be pretty neat.
If you can print high quality glass, which is a tempered structure,
aluminum would be good for radiant energy.
Right.
Man, that unlocks a whole lot of potential, Steve.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you can print glass to the exact design that you want in a high temperature structure, so it can take heat and vacuum pressure, then think of the plasma potential.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I'll tell you what.
You're using a Baker-like tube and two lawnmower engines to make a plasma device, but if you can build something to the design that you choose, that's a whole different story.
Yeah, the only other option is to find somebody who's really good at blowing glass, but then even in that sense, it's not going to be thick, probably. You know, I don't know how good they are at doing that, but, you know, if you ever seen blown glass, if it's like the fair or the carnivals or whatever, you know, but... Yeah, I'd love to.
I've seen rolled glass before, where they've formed tubes out of having flat sheets of high-tempered glass, because basically what they do is they superheat the external part of like a bulletproof glass, if you like, and they have layers in between it.
Well, the key for me is that it's another one the futuristic tools. You know, when the flatbed engraver came out, or the flatbed scanner came out, I thought that was the coolest thing in the world, because now you had the potential of using the CAD program to draw whatever you wanted and then engrave it on metal, you know, and then glass etchers and stuff like that. But if we're going to custom make, you know, some sort of energy device, it'd be nice to have, you know, that set up, you know, somewhere in the lab that we're talking about, you know, the future mad science lab, where everybody could come together and, you know, just build it. Raw materials, you imagine a warehouse the size of the lab that is full of raw materials, things that we've salvaged throughout the time, you know, while we're out and about.
You know, 3D printers are not that expensive.
What did you and Boom Boom do since you got there?
Well, here, I'll let him tell you.
What have we done?
Come on.
Yeah, he said, what you done since we've been
here? Just out of interest, is that Boom Boom or Beaker?
Okay.
That is Dr., by gosh, Raymond Boom Boom Head.
There you go.
On YouTube.
There you go. Anyway,
I have to say, though, I've had visions of Shaziz being the mad scientist from the Muppets, and poor old Boomer being Beaker. Hold these two wires, Boomer.
You guys are a trip. We've been playing around, Scott, with wireless and single wire illumination of fluorescent light bulbs. Shaziz has been showing me how to do it, and he gave me one of those solar exciters and a diagram where I could make more. And then we played around with the X13 motor for a little while, and then we unloaded some fluorescent lights that I brought for him.
We got video of it too.
Yeah, we got videos of all this. And I brought him two solar panels. And
how many fluorescent lights did you bring
him? I only had six that I could bring this time. But the next time we're going to bring about six or eight more, because I want him to use the ballast. And the ballasts are nothing more than six to one step-up transformers. And I want him to try to hook them up, because he wants high voltage. And if you take eight or nine of these,
300 in them.
Yeah, if you take eight or nine of these and hook them in series, you've got over 1,000,000 volts. And I think that would impress you this.
Okay. Just don't do the high amps.
Low amperage.
No, I'm not interested in amperage right at this point. I'm not interested in current watts, and that's how I get myself in trouble, because I say that, but people don't understand what it is that I'm working with. I'm only interested in the frequencies that could be obtained using this. My plasma reactor, for anybody who's looked into any of them videos, it isn't nothing more than a tuner. That's it. It's the equivalent of the old mercury arc rectifier in conjunction or combined with a variable resistor or variac or a variable capacitor. So I can tune this up and down. I can speed it up and slow it down. And with the frequency ranges that I can acquire through high voltage, I can put a lot of pressure inside that reactor and get the ranges that I'm wanting to do. So when you see what it is that I'm going to be doing with it, then you'll understand why it is that I'm doing what I'm doing. Most people, right out of the gate, the only thing to think about when I talk about free energy, alternative energy, or whatever, the first thing to think about, well, can I run my house with it? No, there's trillions and trillions and trillions of frequency ranges out there that you can't run your house with. Now, right now, we do it at 60 hertz, and overseas, they do it at 50 hertz, all right? Well, anything above that on the 60 hertz range will burn the coating off the copper wire. But at the ranges that I'm talking about, it just goes right on past your device. It's almost as if it doesn't even see it. And so you're not going to run your house off of this particular style of energy. However, where the twist comes in is that you can take any frequency. It don't matter what range it is, what megahertz, higher, lower, all the way up into the gigahertz and the terahertz or above or whatever the highest is. It doesn't matter. In the positive realm, and even as back all the way backwards in the negative realm, all those frequencies can be stored as potential energy power. And so with that said, when it comes time to run your house, the secondary system will be taking care of that. That's when the current watts and amps will start applying. But it's what I'm going to be doing with this energy before it even gets to that point. Because as far as energy transfer goes, right now, I think it's like maximum 12 miles you can go with DC current, all right? And AC current can go a little bit farther because of the way that it pulses in and out and it pushes it out even farther. But even at some point, they have to put like amplifiers that will send it out even farther so that they can get that power to be able to extend out even farther. And when you're talking about wireless energy transfer, if you look at the video link that I put in there, or go over to Ryan Abrams at Abrams Lab on YouTube, you'll see a video that he did, and he's getting some pretty substantial distance between there, but not to the maximum of what it actually could be. Because those flare exciters are moving so fast, a transistor isn't nothing more than a really super fast acting switch. And so it's moving so incredibly fast that that field is expanding and collapsing at such a rate that you're not getting out as far as you want. And you can get out farther by upping the power to some extent, but how high can you actually go where that frequency range now becomes where it's not safe any longer? You see where I'm coming from?
Right.
So with what I'm doing is basically building a super sensitive tuner that can go either direction, either on the low side or all the way on the high side, and be able to essentially handle all those ranges. I can send that voltage in, and it's really super simple to make high voltage. You don't have to worry about all the back EMF problems that you do for standard generators, because that doesn't even apply at that point. It doesn't apply until that energy is literally leaping across the spark gap, charging up a capacitor bank, which then in turn dumps into a battery bank, which in turn then runs your inverters that run your whatever.
Household
power. Right. Yeah. But either way, when I talk about it, and I need probably me to have a little bit more diplomatic ways of saying it, that I don't care about current watts and amps, and I'm not saying that you don't need some of that to get what I've got going on, but the style of generators that I've been looking for, such as this X13 that he brought out there, has the potential to, you can literally raise the RPMs up on that thing. You guys, if you go back and look at the video that I did of the hard drive motor, I've had that hard drive motor up to over 450 volts, and that's just a hard drive motor.
That's 6,000.
Yeah, and that's taking it from 5,000 RPMs up to its max on that Dremel, which I think was like 35,000 RPMs, and I know I wasn't getting the full 35,000 because I'm actually using a little brush and a buffer pad in order to be like the gear in between it that's spinning the hard drive.
The X13 will put out 400 volts at about 700 to 800 RPMs.
Yeah, he just said that the X13 at
700 to 800
RPMs
will put out over
400 volts.
What's the RPM per volt on it?
Here.
At 300 to 350 RPMs, the X13 will put out 100 to 110 volts. Oh, boy. I said at 300 to 350 RPMs, the X13 will put out 100 to 110 open volts.
He's too far away from the microphone.
No, he's right up close to it. It must be the
maybe
microphone.
Maybe I'm not talking through the right hole or something. I'm talking loud. Can you hear me?
Raymond?
Yes?
You might want to check your comments about which hole you're talking out of.
Oh, okay. I'm talking out of the hole in the mic.
Yeah.
Now we can hear you.
All right. Anyway, the X13 at 350 RPMs puts out 100 to 110 volts. But you get it up to 750, 800 RPMs, and you're talking 400, 450 volts. Now, the X13 will handle anywhere from 4 to 6,000 RPMs without coming apart. So how many volts are you going to get now?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. And another thing about those X13s I was looking over real good is that there's no back bearing as far as sticking out of the back of the motor. So if I could have a custom-made shaft built that where I could fit 10 of these motors on in series with each other and then run them all independently but on the same exact shaft and use the first phase of the first motor to actually be the one that's spinning them up, you see where I'm coming from? And I'm not going to have to worry about the other ones bogging it down, because I'm not going to be running them under a load like you would think as a regular generator. I'm going to be building up that arc and shooting that arc across through a plasma reactors. There will be one reactor for every single motor that's on that horizontal shaft, and then from that point, then I can start drawing the energy off by shooting it across the spark gap and then tuning it and then running it down into huge capacitor banks, which in turn will pulse the coils.
Yeah, and the thing is, what you have to do is use a separate three-phase bridge rectifier for each motor. Turn it into DC, then hook all the bridge rectifiers in series, and that would even increase the voltage higher.
Yeah, but see, at the point where I'm talking about, you don't have to use the bridge rectifier at that point, because the plasma reactor is acting exactly like the mercury arc rectifier back in the day. It is the diode. It's the rectifier. That's exactly what those things did. Back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, they had the mercury arc rectifier, which looked like a big old glass octopus with anodes and cathodes. And you'd shoot the high voltage AC into the bottom of it. It would heat up the mercury to such an extent, essentially it was a dead short, cause it to get hot and then vaporize. And then that high voltage AC coming in would energize the mercury gas inside that deal and create the plasma. It would build up such amount of pressure inside there that the electrons only were able to flow in one direction, essentially making a diode. And so, well, what Raymond just said isn't incorrect. It's not exactly the way that I'm talking about using it to start
but
with.
It's a way.
Yeah, it is a way to do it. So you could literally draw off that energy. But when you put that...
bridge rectifiers, you could sit there and use the output of each of those bridge rectifiers just like flashlight batteries. You can put them all in series.
Yeah.
Voltages add up. And that's what he was getting at.
Yeah, yeah, and it's right, because you could do it either way. But for the purposes that I'm talking about, I'm going to run it into argon-filled plasma reactors first, and then shoot that across the spark gap and pulse the coils that way. So, like I said, he's 100% right on the version that he's talking about. You could do it either way, but for my purposes, for this particular experiment, I want to keep all the way as far away from the back EMF that I can get. And once you put it under a load, then that's where you got where to start slowing it down. I don't want to slow down at this point. I want it to keep pumping the voltage in as fast and as high as I possibly can. You'll understand why when you see what it is that I'm doing. You'll like it. Trust me. And if I can get a lightning bolt to chase me around the yard, then I'll be satisfied.
Well, yeah, you have them four times.
Yeah, we
yesterday.
Gotta get some really fine horsehair wire or baby fine wire, and go ahead and make up some decent coils.
Yeah, that's he's sending that ceiling fan motor out there for you to check out and see what you think and what you can do with it.
Hey, you got a bicycle out there that's upside down. We're gonna do that.
Do you know, I'd actually quite like to build some wireless electricity transfer station, and then send Shaziz running around in the yard in a copper.
Yeah, we'll just put a prop on a very
well, as long as you get it on video, Steve.
We get a voltage per RPM on something.
Hey, Steve.
On that bad boy.
Hey, Steve.
Yes, mate.
It wasn't lightning bolts. But Shaziz got zapped four times yesterday. Thing is, he didn't have the decency to do it while I had the camera on him, daggone it. That old man can move, I mean, and fast.
Well, it's...
He gets 20,000 volts shooting through his fingers. I mean, he can move.
It's not particularly planned out.
I was honestly thinking of putting together a little tune of Shaziz where he shouts, "Oh, crap." 1.21 gigawatts.
Well, you could probably go through. Somebody did one time a dubstepping video of me on YouTube, but you'd probably go through some old videos and get some little sound bites from each one of them.
Oh yeah, I was thinking of it. I've been playing with a couple of little audio pieces of software recently, and I've got to do it.
Well, if it's radio friendly, I'll play it on air.
Well, you know, OCRAP isn't exactly profanity.
Yeah, that, well, that's fine. That we can slide that one by, but you know, there is a video or two out there where I kind of blew my stack. You know, especially when that one was the people standing around while this guy's stepping on his little boy's hand in China. Boy, I got hot about that one. You don't mess with kids, man. That makes me mad. Yeah, you know, I'm a nice, fun-loving guy until the scales of justice are balanced off like that, and then I get riled up, you know. Once I get that mad, and my attitude matches my hair.
Well, the question is, Shazid, is most of the answers are out there, but we do not have the coordination to make them effective.
Well,
and coordination seems to be the key.
Yes.
Yeah. Well,
the technology is there.
And a lot of people just don't get along.
I think that my experience
seeing what other people are doing, but if we can find a way to get along, we'll move along.
I think that if we get this little group right here, I think that if we get it started and we keep it flowing and we let everybody know ahead of time that it's a no nonsense kind of deal. You know, we ain't got time for, you know, bogus plans or that kind of stuff, or bickering amongst each other, just trying to get some work.
We're saying you're going to show up and not show up.
Yeah, that kind of deal. So, you know, I've been guilty of that once or twice, but that wasn't intentional. That was, I guess, either I come down sick or something emergency stopped, you know. But
well, the stuff happens, you did.
Yeah.
And we get over it. But, you know, there are certain members of the community that are more interested in trying to inflate their own self-importance and try and make themselves look clever.
Yeah.
And work for people.
If you're interested,
I'm guilty of that. I'm sure everybody else is.
If you're interested in joining the dream team, leave your ego and bring your science, because that's what we're interested in. We're trying to put the most brilliant minds together and imagine what we could actually accomplish. See, my whole deal about all this kind of stuff, and the reason why I call the show Mad Science, is because it really makes me mad that I know we got all this technology, some forgotten, some suppressed, and some just sold for profit or shelved or whatever. And there's all kinds of reasons why we ain't where we should be as far as a society. And the fact that anybody is living in this world uncomfortably and there's anybody in this world starving is, in my mind, just flat out ridiculous. Because we got the technology. Steve's talked about on here solutions many occasions about hydroponics and aquaponics, to where you can grow plants and fish at the same exact time in the same exact system. So if we can talk about that here, we could set that up somewhere else for somebody else in the world, you know? And if we could bring all these minds to the table to do such things that we're talking about, we could bring them together to take everything that we've learned in all our research about solar exciters, Tesla coils, Bedini motors, hydrogen cells, and so on and so forth. There's so many different devices out there that all have potential that if we come together to work on, taking all these pieces of the puzzle and not putting our eggs all in one basket, such as this. You know, when I talk about free energy, look outside. The wind's blowing or the sun's out or the rain's falling. There's always something going on outside, including the earth itself, the telluric currents from the earth, galvanic actions from two dissimilar metals. You got thermoelectrics, hydroelectrics. There's so many different ways to tap into the massive amount of energy that's out there, and we can do it in perfect harmony with nature. And so with all that said, that's why I call it mad science, because it makes me mad. You got all the basic science that you need. You got all the answers, all the pieces of the puzzle that you need. Now we need to put some guys down at the table who's willing to take their piece of the puzzle and set it down there next to my piece of the puzzle and your piece of the puzzle and make the big picture that's going to benefit all of humanity. Most of the wars out there fought these days is over resources or, you know, something ignorant. So if we got, like Tesla was saying, you know, you give the world free energy, there's no need for being fighting over coal or fossil fuels or anything like that. And then you got a section of society that's upset because you're even using fossil fuels, because they say that the CO2 is causing the plant to heat up. You all know how I feel like that. I've ranted on that for hours. But either way, if you're going to complain about it, well, there's a solution on the table, and there's this crazy mad-haired science guy and his pals from all over the world sitting there saying, we got the answer, why don't you listen, you know? And support those mad science guys in the backyard inventors and such, all right? And the same thing with the government. The government comes out and they say all the stuff that they say. We got to charge a carbon tax so that we can reduce the deal so that we don't have our 500 days till climate chaos scenario and the planet don't burn up and the polar bears don't drown and so on and so forth. It's ridiculousness at its highest and lowest level in all different directions. It just drives me freaking batty when I know that we have the potential right now to literally design and build a generator that will be environmentally safe, that will be a renewable energy, that even if the battery starts getting low because it ain't wind, ain't blowing, the sun comes out and takes up the slack. You see where I'm coming from, guys? It's as simple as that.
There is one positive factor about the horticultural interests of many people around the world is there are a lot of hydroponic, aquaponic, various different food production systems that are being used in people's backyards. But the question is, what's more important to you, your soap opera or looking after your family?
Exactly. And don't go over there, don't stand in the middle of California over there, or not in the middle, on the edge of California next to one of the largest bodies of water in the world and sit there and boo-hoo because you got a drought going on. Those individuals over at Dubai, they lived in the same kind of scenario. Not only did they build the land out of sand that they were standing on and building skyscrapers, they pumped water all the way to the tip-top of the skyscrapers and used the gravity to let it fall down for pressure and cool the building down at the same exact time. If those guys had the ingenuity to do something like that, then why can't the supposed leader of the free world kind of community over there be able to do the same thing? You got the technology, you're just too doggone lazy or ridiculous not to pay attention. There's guys out there in the oil community who see in the future and are buying into water as opposed to oil, because if they buy into water, they know they can sell a bottle of water for $1 a bottle, when that's even higher than fuel prices. So it's called the blue gold, you know? And then when you got the EPA dumping crud down the river and you need fresh water, that bottle of water looks pretty good by now. You see what I'm saying? That is if you trusted that they didn't take it out of the river. If it's yellow, don't drink it.
In the mid to early 90s, there was a company that produced a product called Perrier. It was bottled spring water. And people laughed. They said, why on earth am I going to pay you for a bottle of water when I can turn my tap on?
Yeah. Well, you know something?
But since then, since the early 90s, how many aquifers have been polluted by large corporations deliberately and intentionally, and lobbyists have funded political campaigns to make sure we don't know about it?
Yeah.
Well, you know something? There is an off-the-shelf product that they've been selling for years called seltzer water, and it tastes terrible.
Yes, it does.
I mean, it's the worst tasting crud. I mean, they use it to mix in mixed drinks, I guess, because I can't visualize anybody, unless they have absolutely no taste buds, wanting to drink this for a refreshment, because it's god-awful. It's nasty. It's worse than nasty. It's disgusting.
I know people that drink it.
Yeah, and Raymond said he knows people that drink it. All right, well, either way, one of the things that you could do is you can go there and buy a 2-liter bottle of that stuff and take and put it inside your doggone hydrogen cell. Do you know what that does? Because it's carbonated. You don't have to add any kind of deal to make the water conductive. Boy, and you want to talk about putting off some hydrogen, that stuff would do it.
I'm quite good at putting off a bit of methane.
Well, yeah, I'm sure you are, and you probably ain't got too many friends when that's going on either, do you?
Certainly not. But I do like my chili.
Anyway, don't learn about gas safety by accident. That's bio warfare, man. I guess it's the Geneva Convention,
yeah,
ain't it?
Really, yeah.
Do you realize how many decades the NSA and the CIA have been chasing my backside?
Well, As long as they don't get too close, according to what you just said, they'll be all right. Unless they got one of them gas masks on, they'll be okay.
Let's not talk about toxicology, eh?
I don't know. The gas masks, they'll filter the deal, but do they filter the funk?
A small particle to filter is small enough to be able to extract them out.
You may still smell it. You may still smell it, but you won't taste it. That's...
Just to put you into a perspective, Shazers, most of your taste buds are actually in your nose.
Both of you.
Oh, my. That just put a bad visual in my head. Moving right along, so back on to the alternative energy deal. I go out there and check out the X-13s and buy you an Israeli gas mask for when you go over to Steve's house to visit and sample some of his homemade brew.
Anyway, just to recap on the things that we can do, because a lot of the time there's a lot of people that say, no, I can't do this, I can't do that, I can't do the other. One thing that everybody can do, regardless of who you are, what location you're in, if you're in an apartment with no balcony, no area at all whatsoever, there's very few places that do not have the capacity to install a window box. If you have a roof terrace, you can set up a small aquaponic system. It doesn't have to be large, it doesn't have to be complicated. You can use an old tin bath to put fish in. A small pump from a fish tank to pump water into a gravel bed to grow food. You can take apart your old washing machine and use a motor out of it to produce some sort of level of energy. You can take old beer cans and make an oven out of it.
Yeah, that's the repurposing everything, man. You would be surprised. Everybody out there who owns a vehicle knows that if you leave the windows rolled up in the summertime, it'd get so hot up inside there you could fry an egg on the dashboard.
Yep.
All right,
I have a great respect for cops that smash the window of cars when people leave their dogs in the back seat and go shopping for 3 hours.
Yeah, but see, I don't know what kind of individual would do that to begin with, but, that just shows you, though, that just with some glass and a frame, you could build a solar oven, a solar dehydrator. I mean, there's so many different ways to not even have to use energy at all that could be, you know. When I talk about not putting all your eggs in one basket, all right, if you're going to cook bread, and you can cook bread out there just sitting out in the sun. My aunts have been making sun tea forever and a day. You throw some tea bags and some water inside of a big jug and set it out and let the sun cook it. And so they get sun tea. So you didn't use any electricity whatsoever to do that, all right? So the same thing. You cook a loaf of bread out there. Dehydrate some food out there. And use no electricity. So every dollar you take away from the man makes me happy. I'm tickled pink every time you pinch a penny off the man. Because that's what it's all about. You know?
It sure is. In 1989...
Only that penny pinch a loaf.
Yeah. She went back to the gas mask again.
In 1989, I was working in a restaurant in England, and one of the waitresses locked her granddaughter in the car.
Oh,
it was
man.
A really hot day, and I took a brick and I smashed the window, and I gave her my week's wages because I said a locksmith would take an hour to turn up. You have your child. Here's the money to repair your window.
Right.
But sometimes solutions need to be, you know, are you going to leave a child in a car for an hour in the middle of summer? Or are you just going to pick up a brick and take them out straight away?
Yeah, because by the time you get in there to find out where the child's parents are, then...
No. She accidentally locked the child in the car.
Oh.
I mean, it wasn't...
So it went on purpose.
No, it was an absolute accident. And she said, what am I going to do? And I picked up a brick and threw it through the side window. I locked the car and took the child out.
Well, there you go, man. That's an action for a solution and an action all together. That's what we're talking about. That's what we need people doing.
Windows are a lot cheaper.
And it cost me my entire week's wages to pay for the broken glass. But I said I'll pay for it gladly.
Well,
what about the splintering glass flying through the air?
Well, you don't throw it right there in the window where the child's laying.
The child was in the back seat. I hit the front window. the portal panel is a small piece of glass.
Oh, it's got to be a negative Nancy in here, man.
Oh,
y'all
yeah.
Are talking.
Oh, yeah,
man.
Scotty. A little bit car.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little vent window. I popped that, put the hand in, I locked the door, we had the child out in 30 seconds. If they called a locksmith, it would have taken hours to turn up.
Yeah, it would cost about 50 bucks.
No, it cost me probably... No, not in England. It would have cost you a lot more than that, mate.
Yeah. Well, either way...
For a guild like the Masonic Lodges.
Either way, no need in bickering over the price or whatever.
The point I'm trying to make is sometimes things are necessary.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And we get wrapped up in how much will it cost. Well, what is the cost of leaving a child in a car for an hour for somebody to come up and provide a solution to something that's really easy to fix?
Well, and speaking of that, the solution now in the alternative energy, green energy, clean energy, renewable energy, free energy, however you want to look at it, somebody made me hip to a while back that there was a need for alternative energy. And so I set out on a mission not only to prove that it's possible, but to stick it to the man who stuck it to me whenever they shut my lights off when I had kids to take care of, to keep cool in the summer and warm in the winter, and had refrigerators full of food that I needed to feed them kids, and they didn't want to have any kind of part of helping me out. Had absolutely no safety net. Their employees were rude and disrespectful to me. When I finally did get my power back on, I sent out a message to the man, and I told him, I said, look, I said, because of the way you treated my family in our time of need and had absolutely no safety net, wasn't willing to work with me, and the rudeness of your employees who told me, pay up or shut up, I'm going to dedicate the rest of my entire life to studying everything that there is to know about alternative energy. And when I get that accomplished, I'm going to share it with each and every one of your customers for free. So when your wallet gets thin, you'll have me to blame. Yeah, me to thank for it.
By law.
So this, the quest for renewable energy, the theory is no longer under debate. It's just the practicalities of implementing it.
Yeah, now it's just doing it. And this X13 that Raymond brought over here, I wish I'd have seen him a lot sooner. I mean, I watched Ryan and them do some stuff with the thing that was incredible. Ryan actually put like 70 pounds of weight on top of it, was pulsing it with a 9-volt power supply or 9-volt battery, whatever, and it was turning with all that weight on the top. And at one point, he actually got up there and sat on top of it himself, and it was still turning it. So, you know, that tells me that was a pretty impressive motor. So I have talked about the X13 prior in some shows, but never actually got the opportunity to see one until Raymond brought one by. But that action, him bringing it over here, has me sold, because I looked inside that motor.
You just bring it by. Give it to you for a birthday present.
Yeah. And I looked all over that motor. And asked Raymond. It's hard to have a word in edgewise because I was distracted by that motor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you get the warm fuzzies to this?
Oh, yeah.
Did you get all over?
I'll tell you what, I wish you guys could have been here and seen Shaziz with that X13. I mean, he was like a kid locked in the candy store. I mean, it was unbelievable.
You mean the fat kid locked in the candy store?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the problem is, if you find fat on my body, then you hit the jackpot, because I'm like skinny as a rail. They used to call me Mr. Salty in the Navy because I had the body of Mr. Salty the Pretzel Man. You know,
so. Is, that's not an investigation I wish to talk to.
Don't you be laughing there, buddy. I heard you.
I ain't even done laughing. That's hilarious.
I tell you what, you strip Shaziz down stark naked, put him broadside to the sun, his shadow look like a zipper. I mean, this man looks like an escapee from a refugee camp.
In fairness, Shaziz is dedicated to global warming, and he's given you a video on exactly how to react when it happens.
Go watch the video, How to Properly Panic During Global Warming. Yeah. That'll save your life.
That'll save your life.
Hey, yesterday we had a really short rain cloud, a sprinkle. Shaziz didn't want to get wet, so he ran over and hid under his wife's clothesline.
All right, enough of cracking on the skinny guy jokes.
Where'd he go? Oh, there he is.
Anyway, yeah, somebody told me that one time that if I turned sideways and stuck my tongue out, I'd look like a zipper, so.
I got bonked on the head with a big fist from a nice, big, fat teacher. And I deserved it. I mean, she walked by and I said, where'd the wall go? And, I mean, it was instant. I slid down in my... one moment I was sitting up in my desk, and the next minute my head was like almost under the desk, and I was on my knees under the desk. She piled drive me.
All right. Well, we can do one of two things. I need to trust you guys to take the helm, and so I can go utilize the facilities, make a nature call or something like that. Or we can take a quick music break and then come back and finish off the Mad Science Show. How's it going to be?
Take the music break. That's fine.
All right.
Should say, Soggy Bottom Boys would be kind of welcome.
Okay.
Yes.
Amazingly enough, that one's right up there, so I'll put that one in there too.
Can't fly like an eagle.
Let me see if I can find that. Man, we're gonna have more tunes. Okay, hold on.
Play that.
Why?
Play that. I'm putting my boots on backwards while I walk down the street, kick so I can kick myself in the butt.
I didn't want to like. I didn't want to like put like 10,000 songs on there, but I got three of them so far, so I'm going to leave it at that. So first one we're going to play, because Steve asked first, is we're going to play the Soggy Bottom Boys, and then we're going to... Then that's the next show, man. The first one we're going to play is going to be the Soggy Bottom Boys, and then Steve Miller Band, because Thomas, Eagle's got to fly. Thomas never got the song played on it. We kind of made fun and heckled about it. Time keeps on slipping into the future. All right, well, stay tuned. You're listening to Mad Science. Peace and love, everybody.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
In constant sorrow all through his day. Trouble all my day. I bid farewell to old Kentucky, the place where I was born and raised. was born and raised. For 6 long years I've been in trouble. No pleasure here on earth I found. No friends to help me now. He has no friends to help him now. It's fairly well, my only lover. I never expect to see you again. Perhaps I'll die upon this train. Perhaps he'll die upon this train. You can bury me in some deep valley. For many years where I may lay. Sleeping in my grave, while he is sleeping in his grave. Maybe your friends think I'm just a stranger. My face you never will see no on God's golden shore. He'll meet you on God's golden shore.
Slipping, slipping, slipping. into the future.
space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
All right, everybody, you're listening to Mad Science. We're back, and old Muddy was over there snoring like an old broken chainsaw. I think maybe he ought to go to bed once in a while and get some sleep. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
Well, he works hard on the Mad Science. No, I wouldn't fault him for that.
No, I can't fault him for that. See, that's one thing about the Mad Science. There's been certain times when I got some projects going on that I wouldn't get the sleep that I needed, but boy, I tell you what, you pay for it the next day.
I'm getting pretty active lately. Got a lot going. Basically, got the old tower down. I straightened that sucker yesterday and made video on it, and I need to grind it down and then paint it red, white, and blue. Red at the bottom, blue in the middle, and white on top so it can be seen. And that's going to be a lot better than that pole down at the shop. I'm going to mount the other wind turbine on it.
Cool. And when Raymond brings that ceiling fan generator over to you that I put together, you could throw one of your props on there.
Yeah, we'll slap a prop on it. Ryan Abram had the ceiling fan blade type prop on that sucker, and basically it had some high winds that snapped the shaft off the front of one.
Oh, wow.
So I think if it goes on in it, it's got to go with... it's got to go with a pulley or something. So, and, you know, take everything real close to it. It doesn't have very much for a thrust.
Well, I'll let you do all that. You're the expert in that side of the field there. So when he brings it, you can see how I did it. And that was just using those cheapo ceramic magnets and some two-part epoxy resin. And other than that, the only thing that I took out was that aluminum ring that they use as the stator portion. Not the stator portion, but the rotor portion. And so that's the only thing I took out, and then glued the magnets in and zip tied it back together because I couldn't find the bolts or the right. Well, I could use the bolts anymore because I took the aluminum ring out.
Is it?
Yeah.
Can I just jump in there a second? Because
yeah.
Muddy sent me a picture a little while back of a lawnmower that looks like it's been converted into a U.S. Army two-seater Jeep.
Cool.
Yeah.
Now, Muddy, how much would that cost to put a tow bar on the back of it and ship it over to me so I can give it to my mother-in-law so when she cuts the grass on her lawn, she doesn't have to use a wheelbarrow?
Right.
Now, in seriously, Muddy, that is a cool invention.
Yeah,
I mean, I've seen some pretty nice stuff. But the thing is you can sit yourself down, you can drive around your garden, you can cut the grass, and you got a trailer on the back to collect it, and you can dump it over the edge into the neighbor's property, but we won't talk about that.
Yeah. And when you get caught red-handed, just say, I didn't do it, and give them that look.
No, dump in your compost pile.
I mean, Muddy, you've got a really nice invention.
Nice thing to do,
a lot
smart
of people.
Thing.
Well, that's not mine, but I like the hell out of it. Look at that.
I've been trying
my best.
You didn't
make
it. Build a
no. That's
destructive.
Instructive.
Oh, God. I thought that was your toy. Sorry, mate. I'm giving you credit for what you don't deserve.
Well, anyway, you know what I'd like to see, guys?
You're better for finding it.
I like to see. We get, what we ought to do sometime is try to figure out how to get, if they still have that series, Junkyard Wars, because I'd like to see our team up against some of them. Them engineers, and see what we come up with as opposed to what they come up with. Because I guarantee you, we're gonna smoke them, man.
Oh yes.
Well, because maybe we should start our own thing.
Yeah, our own version of Junkyard Wars.
Well, let's not call it Junkyard Wars. Let's call it Mad Science Wars.
That'll work too.
And what do you call it? Repurposing.
The argument about renewable energy is
mad
over. We know it's there.
Repurposing wars.
It's just we're not coordinated enough to make it practical.
Yeah, so what we need to do is find somebody amongst the brilliant minds out there who's good at coordination and kind of like steer all of us. See, this is the thing, man. I can do a lot of mechanical work if I have the right tools. And if I ain't got the right tools, I can't do it all. And there's certain things that I know how to make them, but my manufacturing skills stink. And so, if I got somebody who has good manufacturing skills, and all I got to do is tell them how it needs to be designed, and they can jump on a CAD program and then draw it up, and then somebody else can print it up, we could have these things whipped out so fast it wouldn't be funny, man.
I want an Atmo motor.
Yeah, see, there you go. Say you could go down along the file with that right now, and you know somebody with a 3D printer can print it out for you. It's that easy, man. But that's just a small example.
I want a new bottom. Mine's got a hole in it.
That's funny. My doctor dropped me it when I was a kid and put a crack in it. Okay, so ha ha.
No, well, I didn't say that, mate. That was your opinion.
All right. See, it's the one thing about mad science. You're liable to hear all kinds of insanity on here. We never said we were sane. We said we were mad. There's a difference.
When I was 2.5 years old, my brother dropped me.
Yeah, but the same point should is about. I think
Brandon said they dropped him on his head when he's 2.5 years old.
How much did he have to pay for the concrete?
I don't know. You think they really would sue him at 2.5, Muddy? Come on.
Yeah.
Probably some people that would.
They sold him into slavery by giving him a social security number and all.
Yeah.
Hey, tell him my social security number's 2.
His social security number's 2, so he was like right there when it started.
I
was born 2 days.
When you were a cop, would you have gone to a high school and handcuffed a 5-year-old for being rude?
No, absolutely not.
Make society suffer a loss.
Well, you know, and that's the thing, man. People got to they got to wake up. I mean, because all this stuff, the craziness going on, man. I'm only 49, getting ready to turn 50 years old.
There you go, baby.
Raymond is what? You say you're
71?
Raymond's 71. And Muddy, I'm sure you can remember a time back when the kids were polite and respectful and people would open doors for ladies and so on and so forth. Nowadays, you can't even do that because the feminists will be all on you. I can open the door myself. I'm not helpless. God. You know? But back in the day, it was respectful and it was honorable for a man to rush up there and open the door for the lady. Now, it's like, you know, they grab their purse because they're afraid you're going to rip off their purse.
Right.
And they get all crooked-eyed at you because they think you're up to no good. I ain't coming up to ask you for a date, lady. I mean, you're not my type anyway.
Right.
700 pounds, 3 foot tall with a mohawk. All right? Well, that's not my brand, but you're a lady, so I'm opening the door for you. Okay? Now, I wouldn't say all that. That'd be rude. But you see my point, though? How ludicrous it is?
Yeah.
Shaziz, this is a good point. My wife's grandmother died at the age of 89. But every Christmas day, we used to go to my wife's mother's house for Christmas dinner. And her grandmother used to turn up. And she lived in a granny flat about 300 yards away. But my job on that day was to take my wife's grandmother's arm and walk her home like a lady.
Yeah.
Because she was.
Now that's the kind of concept. I mean, look, I don't care out there if people don't believe in certain religious views or values or anything like that, but the thing about it is, you know, if I choose to believe that and I'm walking my lifestyle as a decent person and it's not bothering you, You know, I'm not forcing it on you. There shouldn't be no issue. I mean, we're talking morality as opposed to immorality. Some sort of, you know, basic laws of goodness kind of thing. Doing others as you'd have them doing you.
Morality and matter and has nothing to do with society. Religion. It has to do with
Society has gotten so far away from all that, and all the crazy stuff that you see going on out there, when the complaint comes out that they need clean, renewable, alternative energy, and I'm saying free energy, and you got guys that are willing to give you all the answers for free, then why not take advantage of that? If there's really a problem and you believe in global warming, then you want to support these folks, I would think, you know. Go out there and protest Save the Trees with your wooden sign with the paper deal and your Sharpie on there that is going to end up going in the landfill when you're done with it anyway, you know, or your campfire out there while you're trying to stay warm while you're protesting. It don't make no sense.
Call me an old guy, call me a traditionalist, but probably one of the greatest days of my life is when the lady finally passed away. I was picked as a non-family member to be a pallbearer to carry the coffin to the grave.
Yep.
Because that gave me the opportunity one last time to take this lady home.
That's an honor.
That's an honor. That's, folks, first off, you got to learn how to treat each other better. And second off, you got to stop expecting any government agency out there to raise your kids or teach your kids. You need to teach them yourself. If you are going to send them to a public school out there, at least give them a secondary education from things that you believe in and teach them your values and let them choose from that point on. You know, that's the only way you're going to make this world a better place. And as far as cleaning up this planet, it's as simple as going out there in your backyard and taking old tires out of the creek and trash and disposing of it properly or even recycle it. You know, we talk about repurposing on here. That X13 motor would have ended up in some landfill somewhere or, you know, in a scrapyard. Maybe recycled, but maybe not. Maybe just thrown off in the dirt. But to me, when I saw that thing, I'm sitting here holding the holy grail of free energy in my hand. And everybody's all kind of like, oh, that ain't no free energy, and you're not going to be able to get out more than you're putting in, and this and that, and so on and so forth, but they don't know how I'm using it. I'm not talking about using it in your conventional sense as a generator. When you see what I'm doing with it is, then judge my stupidity or lack thereof. You see what I'm saying there? Judge me by my actions. Don't judge me by your
standards
or whatever.
If you can step past your views and opinions and respect people for who they are and what they are, what better lesson can we learn or introduce into our own personal lives than that?
Yep. And, you know, like I said, man, I was rowdy when I was younger. All right, and when my mom used to call me her wild child, but even in those days when I was rowdy, when I say rowdy, it's rowdy to me, but nothing compared to what you see society doing these days. And, you know, how far can you go? How loud can the rock and roll get, and how violent can the music get where it's no longer music, it's just a bunch of banging on stuff and yelling so loud that your eyes are about to pop out of your head. You lost the point, you know. People want to go hear music because it sounds good and has a rhythm. You can take it too far. And we've taken society way too far.
Way too far.
I said don't take that eagle into space.
Yeah. And if you do, make sure he doesn't go through the Van Allen radiation belt. Oop, NASA crack.
Yeah, Tom mentioned the conspiracy theories, mate. It's not good.
Yeah, I'm not. But either way, I don't care, you know, I give NASA a rash because I wish that they would take a better camera when they go places, you know, spend all that kind of money. But as far as the, you know, the dumping lithium in the air, that to me is irresponsible and ridiculous, all right, you know.
Whatever, you already got bleach.
Especially when you're doing it without somebody's prior knowledge.
It's not the fact that there's something lithium in the air, it's the fact that they think they're too stupid to realize what they're doing. That's the insulting part of it.
Yeah, that's it. That's the whole thing. And EPA out there to protect people, don't be busting holes in old mines and dumping crud down the river, because people need that water. You know, fish need the water.
No, they don't. People can live on fresh air. Sun gazing is a proven technology.
Well, Steve, you can't dehydrate a fish and then rehydrate him and expect him to swim around and then go fishing for that same fish.
No, but salt fish is kind of tasty. Don't forget I'm a chef.
Salt fish, Fields? The new pork.
W.C. Fields said, somebody asked,
there's many people on the planet who survive on it, mate.
He said, Lord, no.
And if you live in a hot country where you sweat a lot, fish, you lose electrolytes, and you need to replace that.
Salt.
Well,
need electrolytes. It's what a body craves.
We're down to about the last 10 minutes of the show, and I know you guys like to be long-winded right there at the last, so... you know, if you got something that you want to put out there, some links or some YouTube channels or some pertinent deals, that would be about the time to get in on that. So we'll start off with Muddy because he's a long-windedest.
Long-winded.
Yeah, long-windedest. That's a new term. It's going to be in the dictionary as soon as I get my Sharpie out. I'll even have a definition for it.
Yeah, the next thing I got a guitar, a 12-string guitar. It's got a file where the bridge is supposed to be. It is a triangle file, and that thing's like about 5/8 of an inch high. So the string action is definitely too high. Somebody took the front of it. They made their own pick guard and fancy wooden design over the top of it. And when they placed that bridge on there, it definitely wasn't where it was supposed to be, number one. Number two, the nut is set in high to where you have to stretch the strings down. I've done this to several guitars. I'm going to make video, put it on YouTube. I'm going to show you how crappy it sounds, even tuned by harmonics. And then, when it's done, it's going to sound beautiful. And I'll show everybody how that's done and what you need to look at.
Well, while you're doing that video, throw in how to make a canjo. You know what those are?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Show people how to make one of those. Those are pretty neat. I got one.
I got a one-board guitar. it's in the fashion.
Cool.
So that's later on, though.
All right. So with that said, who's next in line?
I go.
Okay. Hold on. Raymond's taking the mic.
Fellas, I've known Shaziz here for several years
gotta
now.
Got to get closer than that.
All right. There you go. How about now?
Yeah.
Okay. I've known Shaziz for several years now, and I've been on guest on this radio show quite a few times. But this is the first time I've ever met the man face to face, and we spent quite a few hours together yesterday. He's got an idea. A lot of people are not understanding because they're not listening. But the thing is, he is right. Don't down him until he's done, because when he's done, you're going to see something absolutely amazing. He's explained it to me. I'm not an electronics genius, but I halfway understand it, and he is definitely going someplace, okay? So everybody just hold your breath, and we'll give him some space, and this man is going to set the world on his ear and spin it.
Yeah, maybe even end up in a science book in a good way.
Yeah.
They'll probably put me in, remember one time, Steve, you told me that the university wanted to use my website, shaziz.com, as what not to do when building a website.
No, they didn't want to use it. They do use it.
Yeah.
That is a dazzling website.
Yeah, but there's a whole lot more to that website than meets the eye, so that's why it's been up there that long. So with that said, yeah, yeah. Don't be surprised.
It's got more Easter eggs than the White House.
Yeah.
All right, the thing is, a lot of people don't know what he's doing because he's not telling the whole story. But I'm telling you right now, this networking thing is exactly what he needs. What he's doing is building high frequency. Scott Brown is the genius that's going to pull together what he's doing. And I'm going to be the muscle that's going to get it done.
Cool.
I'm going to be the belligerent that's going to stand there and wind you all up while you're doing it and try and make you laugh and you can't concentrate. That's my mission in life. I am the Joker.
So we have a Jerry Springer in the crowd and a videographer and a mechanic and a machinist and an electronics guy and a bunch of other
hey,
Hey, hold on, Muddy. There's a difference between a joker and a fool.
Oh. Yeah.
Do you know what the definition of the actual definition of a fool is?
What?
It's somebody that would risk everything for no reason.
Oh, Lord, yes.
Well, we're trying
that
to...
That is the true definition of a fool.
We're trying to find you a solution to everything. There's a purpose. Either way. Thomas, you got anything?
Yes,
yeah.
You already nailed my whole networking thing, so...
Cool.
No?
I'm sorry to steal your thunder there, brother.
I've been throwing that thunder around, hoping it would catch so the rumbling would keep on with other people. That way I don't have to keep doing it. I can work on something else.
Well, I keep repeating it, so hopefully that the message will get out there. And if you're listening into the Mad Science Show out there, and you like what you hear, and you like the mission that we're trying to accomplish... There's multiple ways to listen out there. You just go out there and Google Mad Science and Shaziz, and you'll find links all over the place for all different networks to listen in. You can go over to Awake Radio, People to People Radio, ShazizRadio.com. I don't care whether you're in our chat room or their chat room, as long as you're sharing information. And, you know, that's what it's all about. It's that networking. And if you like what you see or hear on the website or the radio show or the YouTube videos or whatever, share it on your social media networks out there. If you know anybody who's interested in alternative energy, green energy, clean energy, renewable energy, free energy, however you want to terminology, I'm calling it free energy, and I'm going to prove it 150,000% beyond a shadow of doubt. That's my ultimate goal. If I succeed, we all benefit. If I fail, I wasted a lot of time. But I don't think it's a failing option, especially after seeing this X13 motor. I'll tell you what. But if you like what you see in here, yeah.
Can I give me a final thought, please?
Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
I looked at an application called Uvu recently. It allows 12 people to have consecutive webcam conferences, audio, video, and chat, where you can stream YouTube whilst you're chatting and upload directly to it by recording your session while you're having it. I would really ask the Mad Science community to go out there, take a look at it, and let me know what you think.
Yeah.
I honestly think it's probably a good application, but we need help from the community to make sure that it's secure.
Yeah, help us troubleshoot it. And if we can get that application and know we can use that...
Hey.
Yeah.
Let's throw another one on the pile there then too. Let's look at Open Broadcast OBS. It's Open Broadcast Software.
Yeah.
It's an open source. It will record more than just what's coming off a camera feed. You can record what's coming off a TV video screen while you're working on something. You can save it. You can save it on your computer desktop and then upload it later, or you can. It's got streaming options, so you can actually connect it to things to stream it. So,
okay,
it's all part of virtual labs, guys. Let's get it working.
Yeah, that's the key right there. Imagine virtual labs. If you could go there and you got a chat room where you can talk real time with your favorite researchers out there and help them troubleshoot it. So you could be in the chat room watching and listening in, and you could have that missing piece of the puzzle that we need to solve a problem that we're working on at that time. Tom's really good at chemistry. Muddy's good at actual flux wind turbines and a whole lot more. And Raymond's got a vast amount of information. Steve's got a vast amount of information. All this combined is the pieces of the puzzle necessary to do exactly what we all believe can be done. That's what it's all about. That's why we're trying to do virtual labs, to get you involved and everybody involved and just get it done. Anything last there, Raymond?
I'm saving it for later.
Okay, he's saving it for later. So with that said, you've been listening to Mad Science. Thank you, and stay tuned. More to come down the line there. Check us out, ShazizRadio.com. Peace and love, everybody.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office, and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Crap. Ah! Ah!
Operator, give me the number for 911.